Well, he said maybe, and then...
I have snacks out in the truck. Do I need to bring them in?
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. This is the Harbor Advisory Board meeting, Thursday, December 1st, 2022. We're meeting here at the Vets Hall at 5:30 p.m. Let's see. Do we have roll call, Lori?
Member French?
Here.
Member Witkowski?
Here.
Member Vail?
Here.
Member Myers?
Here.
Member Green?
Here.
Member Dowdy?
Here.
Chair Hansen?
Here.
And you have a quorum.
All right, wonderful. Thank you very much. Next would be the moment of silence. I wanted to say our hearts go out to the family of Dick Rogers. He will be sorely missed. Also in our thoughts are, I'm going to pass over that and just say that there's a lot of strife going on in the world today, and so if we can take a moment of silence. All right, thank you, everyone. Lori, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Sorry to get you off guard there. My apologies. I'll ask next time, or maybe I won't. Because I won't. Yeah. Right. So we have our advisory board member liaison announcements. I'm going to start over with Mary.
No announcements for me.
All right, Member Green.
I got an offer from Cal Poly Chorale or Chorus. I sent it over to Waterfront Master Leaseholders in the Chamber of Commerce for super cheap. I think it's like $100 an hour. You can hire carolers at Christmas time. If it's too late to do it this December, it might be something to consider for next December. Different locations around town for super cheap to bring in nightly or weekly carolers. But that's it.
All right, thank you. Member Vail?
It's all quiet on my side, thanks.
All right, Member Dowdy?
Oh, sorry.
Yes, wintertime is coming, so if you have a boat, I'd make sure that your lines are good, pennant lines are good. I've seen more than one pennant line reduced to hardly anything after a storm, so... I'd suggest make sure your lines are good and tight. Also, I remember Dick Rogers working here, and I feel so sorry that he's passed away. He was a real gentleman.
Okay. Member French.
I just want to second that. I know when our boat capsized in November 9th, 1987, Dick was one of the first guys down there. And he and Jim Kroll were part of the rescue, and they spent a lot of their time off helping us get the boat back together. And you cannot replace that. Besides the fact that he was just one hell of a guy. I'm bummed.
And co-chair.
No announcements at this time. Thank you.
Okay, my announcements. Now that we have all the results from the election, I want to emphasize the importance of free speech. One of the things that I was going to mention during the moment of silence, a current event in China is the death of over 50 people in a factory and 10 people in an apartment fire. They the residents believe the deaths could have been prevented if it weren't for the strict COVID regulations. Numerous citizens gathered in protest. The government response was to locate individuals via their phone and persecute them for being there and removing videos from social media. As Americans, we should be grateful for our rights. It's important to hear all voices, listen, learn, get the facts. As an advisory body, I hope we are all doing our due diligence to listen and gather the facts so we can be a respectable voice of this community. That being said, there is a flyer going around for all the new available positions on Morro Bay boards, commissions, and committees. So please share with all friends, family, and community members, and let's get a lot of people applying and who want to have their voice heard. Two, due to the heavy rains, the boat parade has been rescheduled for the following weekend. It's raining right now. Three, my last announcement is that this will be our harbor director's last advisory board meeting, Eric Endersby. He will be leaving the department right before Christmas. He still resides in Cayucas and will hopefully be available to aid in the department's transition. I have had the privilege to work with Eric closely on a few committees and as a subleasee and master leaseholder over the last decade. He has great knowledge of the waterfront and its history. I will miss his creative idioms, storytelling, and overall, you did a great job. And that, knock on wood. All right. So with that, we have our, Hyland?
Yes.
Is Hyland back there?
Yes, can you hear me?
Oh, sorry. Do we have anybody in the queue such as a liaison?
We do not.
With the city council? Okay, so no city council liaisons, and I know we have new city council members, so I hope that next in January we have some liaison, hopefully that can interact with us during the meetings. So on that note, we have a presentation by the Embarcadero Master Leaseholders. Bob Fowler is here to represent. Welcome.
I kind of forgot something.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. You're on hold. Beep.
Okay.
No problem. You're welcome. The Morro Bay Community Quota Fund is inviting fishermen and scientists, citizen scientists, and others to submit proposals for research on ways to increase fishing activity on the Central Coast from Morro Bay and or Port San Luis harbors consistent with responsible marine stewardship. MBCQF has prepared the following. A quick online survey for public input by January 15th, 2023 on research priorities and indications of interest in submitting a proposal at, are you ready for this? https://www.surveymonkey.com/r/mbcqfres22. Or you can call the Harbor Department. You're welcome, Eric. You're welcome, Lori. Draft RFP that will become available for public review and comment at Morro Bay Community Quota Fund.org. A final RFP will be issued at the end of January 2023. After public input and finalization of the RFP, there will be a webinar to provide additional information, answer questions, and support preparation of research proposals. Proposals will be due February 28th, 2023. That is all.
Thank you. And may I present Bob Fowler, EML.
Hi, my name is Bob Fowler, for those of you who don't know me. I built the Morro Bay Landing at 1215 Embarcadero, and I'm the master leaseholder there, along with the whole dock facility. I'm also on the board with the Embarcadero Master Leaseholders Association, which we formed because of the COVID situation 2.5 years ago. As it turned out, I think we weathered COVID a whole lot better than I ever expected to when we went through that. There were a lot of casualties to that, some businesses that didn't make it, but overall, I think as Eric has demonstrated to you with our revenues and so forth, that we actually came out of it in pretty good shape. Nevertheless, the organization is together, and I think it's something that that is long overdue. I think that the city hasn't had the benefit of a coherent kind of strategy or feedback from the master leaseholders and the tenants out here, and I think a lot of the city's policies have been lacking that kind of input. So we're hoping to be be that ombudsman or that sort of resource for the city, for the HAB, for the city council, for Chamber of Commerce and so forth, and try to bring that kind of a viewpoint to the discussions and the decision-making process for the city. So we've evolved from looking at things from the tragic standpoint of COVID to let's look forward and see if we can help give some input to solving some of the problems, which obviously the budget the Harbor Enterprise Funds has suffered over these years. And from my standpoint, I think there's some obvious reasons for that. But it doesn't seem to get the attention from the city staff. And it's not, this isn't criticism of the city staff. This is a lack of a resource that we'd like to be able to bring to it. So we put together a position paper that we spent actually much too much time on, to be honest with you. And we've addressed a whole lot of issues in there, among them management of the waterfront leases, parking, just all the issues that are at the forefront for us right now. With Eric's resignation and the fact that he's leaving, there's an opportunity now, I think, that there's reorganization going on at the city level, looking for Eric's replacement. And what we're advocating for, probably the most important thing that's in front of us right at the moment, is we're advocating for a new management position within the city to be a manager of the master leaseholds out there. I think if you look at the kind of structure that we have out here, the Embarcadero and the Tidelands Trust properties are what I like to refer to as, well, they're an asset of the city. Eric is one of the few managers that I know of in the private or in the public sector that has to go out and generate his own budget. I don't really know when. I can't think of another situation where somebody has to, where a director has to be able to go out and do that. I like to think of the Embarcadero as the city's mall. We work on based on a percentage or on a base rent versus a percentage rent. The idea and the concept of percentage rent started back in the 60s when the interior malls first came out. I think one of the very first one in the country was in Portland. It was called the Lincoln Mall. One of the first ones in California was at Topanga Plaza. But the concept there was that the developer of the mall was putting together a venue for retail kinds of operations, be they restaurants, retail stores, clothing, all the department stores and that sort of thing. And the idea was that by managing the mall properly, by keeping up with dynamic tenants, cutting edge tenants, making sure the mall was fully staffed, that the mall manager would derive a benefit because the tenants would then pay a percentage of their income, and as their income went up, their percentage rent went up. So the mall manager received a benefit by having managed the property to the benefit of his tenants there. Right now, we're advocating for the city to come up with a manager. The County of Ventura, just a couple of years ago, they were looking for a manager to replace one that was leaving that particular jurisdiction. They hired a headhunter to go out, and there's a number of people that are in this industry right now. Charisse and I were on the lease policy committee a couple of years ago, and we went out, the members of the committee, and they interviewed all the different Tidelands leasehold in the state. You've got San Diego, you've got Marina Del Rey, San Francisco, Long Beach, Santa Barbara, Ventura, Channel Islands, and everything up north through Eureka that have the same Tidelands Trust kinds of things. Most of those have a manager that is schooled in not only the bureaucratic side of management, but also understands the business side of management and understands the complicated leases that we have and the development agreements that you have to be able to put together to keep things moving and keep the dynamism going and enhance the income and the traffic and so forth for the different businesses and stores out there. That's who we'd like to see. We'd like to see somebody that has that. That person can become an ombudsman for the Embarcadero, but not just for the Embarcadero, also for the other businesses that are related to that, such as the new motel that we're talking about up on the Bluff Top. We think that there needs to be somebody who is an advocate for these businesses, that looks at it from the standpoint of the business transaction, and that can help navigate through the complicated community development process and the leasing process. And so we'd like to see that happen. I think it's long past time for Morro Bay to be able to bring somebody in to do that. There's a big pool of talent available for that. From all of these different jurisdictions, they have people that work on these things day in and day out. And those, I'm sure there's somebody out there that a headhunter can go out and find for us that can be brought in that has that kind of experience and so forth. Right now, if you look at some of the businesses down there, the Libertine, what's it been, 10, 12 years that Burt Caldwell's been trying to redevelop that? Some of the Kayak Horizons, that's another property that should have been redeveloped. Geo's Water Lease. And there's other opportunities out there that have just not been exploited. I think it's easily, you could solve at least $500,000 of your annual income just by sorting those out and getting them done, and having somebody who can navigate through the community development process and actually be an advocate on city staff with a clearer viewpoint on it. I'll just give you one example. Verges is one of Geo's tenants on the waterfront down there. Patriot Sport Fishing in my building is their competition. Patriot has spent, has paid about $50,000 a year in percentage rents. Verges has been operating down there without benefit of lease and not paying percentage rents for 3 or 4 years. There's $200,000 sitting on the table there that just hasn't been collected because the lease hasn't been renegotiated. I invite you to read our position paper on this. We've taken positions on paid parking, which we encourage and advocate for, triangle parking lot, and also alternative funds for the Harbor Enterprise Fund, such things as sales tax. About 20% of our sales tax is being generated through the waterfront down here, and yet I know the city's allocated some money for that, but on a permanent basis, some of that should be coming into the enterprise fund, in addition to some of the TOT. We've also taken a position on workforce housing. That's a lot more complicated and probably isn't something that the Harbor Advisory Board has a direct influence on, but it's something that the city of Morro Bay really needs to take on and get developed, because our business is down here. Most of these are service-oriented kinds of jobs, and we're having to recruit people from Atascadero and Paso Robles and so forth because they simply can't afford to live down here. I think there's several opportunities out there that the city could be developing right now for some. I hesitate to say affordable housing, because I think workforce housing is the important element that we're looking for. At any rate, I'm happy to answer any questions and can't think of anything else to say.
All right. Thank you so much, Bob. So the way that we're going to do this is we're not taking any positions, but we are going to ask any questions. So I'll just take them by hands raised. Go ahead, Cal.
Yeah, Bob, I really like the paper. You guys look like you've invested, I wouldn't say too much time, but it's well written. I did have a couple questions specifically around the position, that lease manager position. You did talk about a couple other Tideland Trust-like entities like Ventura and others. From a revenue perspective, were they similar in size? I mean, we're like $2 million a year. Were any of those ones, you know, comparable or much larger, much smaller?
Well, they go full spectrum. You've got the city of San Diego. You can just imagine what San Francisco is like. But then you've also got Eureka and Monterey. Monterey is probably closer to the size of Morro Bay.
And they had a separate position. And they had a separate position.
You know, I can't attest to.
Fair enough.
I can tell you the Channel Islands does. I can tell you the Ventura does. I know that.
A couple other places.
Yeah, a number of other places. Right. San Francisco certainly does.
Yeah.
But I know Santa Barbara does as well. They have a waterfront manager. In fact, they have a staff of three or four people that that manage the waterfront there from a business standpoint, not just the harbor patrol.
And one other clarification, and it may not be in the position paper directly or be appropriate, but the way it's worded in here, your position is that it should be funded by the city and not the Harbor Enterprise Fund. Is that correct, or is that not?
No, I think that position probably is something appropriately funded by the Harbor Enterprise Fund.
Okay,
but I think that position more than pays for itself over time, and if you just simply look at what hasn't been done, what's been languishing here. That position is probably going to cost someplace in the realm of $200,000.
Yeah, I saw the dollar amount.
And that's just a guess. I'm picking a number out of the air.
Yeah, fair enough.
But just attention to detail, attention to getting the redevelopment things done, and arm wrestling community development to get work done down here would be what I would like to see happen.
Okay, thank you.
And would pay for itself.
All right, that's all the questions I had, Bob. Thank you very much.
I really appreciated your position paper. It brought up several points that, as a private citizen, I've made over the last 5 or 6 years. I guess as it pertains to the Harbor Advisory Board, a board that has been described in a local publication as having no real authority, what do you see as our role over the next few weeks or months in your efforts?
I'm not quite sure. we made the present, or we gave the position paper to the city council to begin with, because all due respect, they're the top of the food chain, and they're the real decision makers. But I would comment that My prior experience was in Ventura Harbor. I had a leasehold there that was it was Anchors Way Marine and the Scotch and Sirloin Restaurant. We bought that a long time ago. Bought it out of bankruptcy with Bank of A. Levy. And they are a port district. I understand that's very different. But they basically are, the commissioners there are appointed by city council. And once they're appointed, they're on until they resign or whatever. But they also provide a lot of insulation on the part of the city. I often go back to way back when there was the Ventura, they had the retail area in Ventura Harbor there that's on the ocean side. And the developer that went bankrupt. And the city got themselves, or the Port Commission kind of got themselves into a tiff there, and they ended up in bankruptcy because the developer sued them and ended up winning. Had it been the situation that we have here in Morro Bay, the city would have been liable for it. In that case, it was Port District that went through the bankruptcy and insulated the city from that kind of a liability. I'm not sure that isn't worth consideration here in Morro Bay. Just a thought.
All right, thank you.
Hi, thanks so much for the paper. I specifically appreciate your commentary on transferring some of the transient occupancy taxes that are gathered from the waterfront to the Highlands Trust. I had a question regarding the position that we were talking about and whether, I think you mentioned it working for the city. Do you have an opinion on whether the lease manager should sit under the harbor director or outside of the harbor department within the city somewhere?
Yeah, that's an organizational issue that I'm not sure that I've got a good grasp on. I think it depends on the individual. There's two really different kinds of responsibilities going on here. You've got the public safety issue with the Harbor Patrol and all those kinds of things, and the general management of the waterfront. And then you have the business aspect of it. It's the business aspect of it, I think, that has been lacking. But whether or not that person is the same person that ought to be in charge of the Harbor Patrol, I don't know. In the city of Ventura, for example, used to be Oscar Pena, but I think he's probably retired by now. But that, I think he called himself I forget what his title was. At any rate, he ran the Harbor Patrol as well as the business operation. Like I say, I'm not sure. I think it depends on who that individual is, whether or not they have the ability and expertise to do the public safety side of things as well as the business side. What we advocate for is we need a strong business manager and an advocate for the businesses, and like I say, an ombudsman that can navigate the bureaucratic processes that we have to live with as a part of the city's assets. That's what we'd really like to see, is to see the city realize that these are an asset, that it's a business, and that managing it properly maximizes income, both for the tenants down here as well as for the city, but particularly for the city.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've read through it fairly thoroughly. It's covers a lot of points, and I thank you for that. I have no questions for you because it's very clearly laid out. Thanks.
Gene?
Yeah, this is Eric. This is a question for Eric. Eric, ballpark, would you say that you spend 50% of your time on public safety and the other 50% on lease site management, or some ballpark figure?
Well, ballparking, it's probably, I mean, I'll say the business side, meaning leases, budgeting, you know, finance is the business side. I'm probably 90-10 on the business side, 10%. I still drive a boat, but don't get out very often doing it.
Thank you.
Becca oversees, you know, patrol supervisor oversees, you know, 95% of the operational part.
Thank you.
Laura, did you have anything to add? Are you good? Okay. Couple things that I just wanted to say. I am on the Embarcadero Master Leaseholders Committee. What are we? Group? Corporate?
LLC, something.
LLC. My takeaway from the concept of having a manager, property manager, is really to hold all of the businesses equally accountable for each other's property. And from there, everybody benefits. So if everybody's doing a good job maintaining their property, then we all do a good job. And again, with the whole fairness of what it is that everybody's charged, leases will come up, and hopefully, because we were on the lease policy, they will even out, and so we'll get retain some of that fairness or get more equal ground. So hopefully, yeah, a lot of those leases will get negotiated sooner than later. I do know that as far as revenue generating, that I'm going to bring up during the budget portion of today's agendas, a possibility of holding a workshop, knowing that measure B22 not working out is going to still continue to have issues with our own budget and being able to take care of the infrastructure. So hopefully we can have a workshop where we can take some of these ideas from all the different groups within the community to help us find better revenue-seeking ideas. So I'll definitely pass that on, as well as hopefully publicize that if we're able to do that. And that, I mean, you guys all have a lot of really good ideas that would benefit us to have a workshop. And then I do know, as far as the current position, that's interesting to me is that the harbor department is ran, or the boss is the city. And if you're going to have an advocate for the businesses and that, and a manager for the businesses, sometimes it's very difficult to have them attached to the city. So I just, maybe we need to look at that as far as having an advocate who the boss is. Cities should care about that, because they will increase revenue just like the owner of a mall would. So hopefully that niche gets filled within the next couple years. But thank you so much for coming in and providing that today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for your attention. I appreciate it.
All right. Okay, so what? Item A. No, we're not there yet. So right now I'd like to open up public comment. So Madam members of the audience, to address the Harbor Advisory Board on Harbor Business Matters, do we have anybody in the audience today that wishes to speak during public comment? Please state your name. Hello.
Yes. Hello, I'm John Bergener. I am the Vice Commodore and 2B Commodore of the Morro Bay Yacht Club. And I just came here to observe and get a little insight on what's happening and see how it may affect the yacht club. So that's why I'm here. Thank you very much. Any questions, Chris?
Thank you very much.
All right, great.
Okay. So next we have our consent. Hyland, do we have anybody in the queue on Zoom that wishes to speak during public comment?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. Okay, so now we have our consent calendar. We have A1. Does anybody wish to pull that?
Yeah, I wanted to pull it to ask one question.
Okay, go ahead.
The question for staff. Looking down the breakdown of department activity, there's a line item that I'm just curious what it means when we see the number of enforcement contacts. What is that particular activity?
Anything to do with any kind of enforcement, whether it's contacting somebody about an expired liveaboard permit, a boater speeding down the bay, see somebody with a little kid without a life jacket, anything that has to do with enforcement, and up and down the board again, and parking as well, Lontramp, you know, if we're dealing with some issue down there, any kind of a contact we have like that.
Do any code enforcement issues go through Harbor, or are they all through planning and community development?
Kind of depends on what it is. The police department is now divided the city up into sectors or beats, and so we have an officer that's assigned to the waterfront beat, and so he comes down at least once a week and helps us out with some of the stickier, more complicated issues, and then we'll pull in code enforcement if there's, you know, some sort of a general city code enforcement issue. We had a thing the other day or a couple weeks ago with some kind of matter that got disposed of in the gutter. You know, it sat in this pool of kind of fetid water in the corner, and just so we pull in code enforcement because they bring that expertise of the rest of the municipal code and all the stuff that goes along with that. So it's a teamwork effort. We generally, most of our enforcement is restricted to the boating on the water stuff, basic boating enforcement, and then the parking. And then, like I said, on the water, if it gets something a little stickier, you know, we'll have, you know, sometimes we have domestic issues on the water. We'll bring in the police department to help with those bigger things.
Cool. Thank you very much. That's all I have.
I had one other comment, too. I noticed one response from the Harbor Patrol missing, notably rescued my father, a fisherman whose boat had died and was towed in from the Harbor Patrol. So thank you for that and the support of my family there. And also, I participated in the annual Witch's Paddle, and it was massive, and the current was massive. So thank you for the support there, which must have been a very stressful time for you and your officers.
I'm gonna add one more thing since Mary got nicely personal. Looking at the records of October 8th, I see there were three or four incidents on that particular day. What wasn't mentioned was my wedding floating in the middle of the bay. So I appreciate all the safety out there on the bay, and actually at the triathlon too. Conditions at the triathlon were pretty treacherous. About the lowest temperature water that you could have an open water swim, and Harbor did an amazing job having lifeguards out there, having boats out there. It's the first time in a race that I've ever thought about either quitting mid-race or grabbing onto a surfboard, and Harbor was there, so I could rest assured that I was safe.
All right. Oh, Gene has something too.
Yeah, this is just basically a question to Eric. Are they going to have the lighted boat parade Saturday, or did you guys postpone it a week?
Postponed it a week due to the weather forecast, wind, and a fair amount of rain. So December, was that 10th, I guess? Yeah. And if it rains again, you know, and we end up getting shut down on the 10th, then that's it. There isn't another rain date. So cross your fingers.
Thank you.
Okay, so we just had some questions. We didn't necessarily pull the consent calendar. Do I have a motion to receive and file as is?
Motion to receive and file.
And second? Second, Chris. All right, thank you. Do you want to do a roll call on that one?
Member French?
Yes.
Member Witkowski?
Yes.
Member Vail?
Yes.
Member Myers?
Yes.
Member Green?
Yes.
Member Dowdy?
Yes.
Chair Hansen?
Yes.
And your motion passes.
All right, thank you. All right, we're going to be moving on to business items. Business B1 is presentation of the Center of Organization Effectiveness Organizational Assessment Report for the Harbor Department. I believe that's Eric. You're going to address us.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I'm just going to run through and kind of give you an update on where we're at. As you heard from Bob Fowler, you know, in the EML and, you know, my pending leaving the city and you know, our department is really two full-time positions down from where we used to be, you know, 10 years ago, and I'll get into that a little bit. But All those things have kind of come together earlier this year, and it became a good opportunity for us to look at our organization and see how we can rebuild our org chart, because we're, you know, the jobs and duties and responsibilities haven't decreased any. If anything, they've increased. And not just the on the water and the people and the events and all that, but just, and again, as you heard from Bob, you know, the in the early days of COVID, we thought, you know, the economic world was going to end, and it did for a few months, and then it turned around and came back, and we had two of the best years we've ever had from a revenue standpoint. So a lot of people coming here, a lot of usage on the bay, locals, visitors alike, and all the activities and all the things going on has just brought a lot of activity to our department. And then all the business side, all the leases and everything going on there, and all the administration of that needs to happen. There's just a lot going on, and we've been doing it with seven people up until COVID hit, and then we ended up doing it with six, and like I said, we had eight before. So we hired the Center for Organization Effectiveness, which is a nonprofit organization that sprang out of San Diego government a few decades ago. They used to be a department of the city of San Diego, and they're basically a big, as you can imagine, the city of San Diego probably has, you know, thousands upon thousands of employees. They were basically the HR department of San Diego, and they figured out what each department was going to do and what the org chart should be and the job duties and responsibilities and number of people working, and they became really good at what they did, so good that other organizations down in San Diego County would look to them and say, hey, you guys, you know, what should we do about this? And they would help them and advise them out, and it got to the point where they were getting asked for so much help that it made sense for them to branch off it's a kind of a hybrid nonprofit JPA organization that sprung out of that and became its own entity that hired itself out on a cost basis, you know, a cost per hour basis, to help organizations up and down the state be more effective, you know, exactly what their name says, whether it's team building, whether it's, you know, figuring out what your org chart needs to look like, whether it's you know, helping the city, you know, be more responsive and doing what it wants to do. And so that's all they do. And so the city manager hired them a couple of winters ago for some team building. And so we recognize them as being the good partner to bring in to help us with our department, knowing that we were to the point of, you know, almost to the breaking point of trying to keep everything going. With six people, it just, there's, you know, balls starting to get dropped and things that weren't getting done. And so we brought in TCUFOE to help us figure out what our organization should look like. You know, a little personal part about me, I've, you know, kind of had retirement on my horizon, you know, starting a couple of years ago. I was figuring I was, you know, 2 to 4 to 5 years out. But then when we came along with this organizational assessment, it started to make sense for me to bow out and not necessarily build the department around me as department head anymore and let the department get built back up, knowing that, you know, I'm going to be gone in the fairly near future anyhow. And so that's kind of, you know, part of my decision making on stepping aside and then hopefully being a part of this and seeing it through. You know, my day's coming up pretty quickly here, but we'll see what happens. So TCUFOE spent a good amount of time interviewing members of the community, waterfront leaseholders, my department, obviously, other city employees, and just general citizens, just trying to get a sense of you know, what our department is, what our department does, and then how the community thought we should operate and what we should be doing and how we should be structured. And so they came out with a report that's in your staff report. You know, I don't necessarily want to go through it page by page by page, but can kind of hit some of the highlights of it. You know, they've, you know, kind of, you know, had an executive sort of summary overview of things, the purpose of the assessment, you know, who they talked to and what they did and the parts of it that they engaged in, the stakeholder engagement and their basic findings. If you look on page 5, starts with facilities and you know, they've, you know, and some of this may seem like, well, no duh, we knew that, but you know, they were looking at it from a holistic standpoint and really seeing, you know, where we stood as a department and what we did well, what we needed to do better, and what the opportunities are and how to move forward into the future. So from a facility standpoint, obviously deferred maintenance, antiquated buildings, we all know that, not just our harbor office, but You know, up and down the waterfront, there's a number of facilities. That's been our capital problem, and our funding that has been our problem for quite a while here, and we've been trying to figure that out. And obviously, you know, too few staff dedicated to too many tasks and too many things going on. You know, when my predecessor retired, Rick Algert, that was in 2010, which was, you know, we were 2 years into the big economic recession, and the city administration elected to not rehire the position, and we went without, and we had a business coordinator, the predecessor to predecessor of Lori, and I co-managed the department until she passed in 2012, and then I was named department head, and then we were basically in the process of hiring, you know, what the EML is recommending, which is a business or a lease manager, somebody to really take on the lease aspects, because I came from the operational end, I came from the Harbor Patrol end. And then the power plant announced they were shutting down a couple of years early, which was $275,000 of revenue out of a $2 million budget, took a big hit, so we really didn't have room to hire that position on, so we basically went without and just managed as we have, you know, for the last 10 years. And then, like I said, COVID hit, and we lost another position to that. And so we're trying to build back up. So too few staff, you know, being able to dedicate themselves to too many things. Insufficient funding to address the backlog of capital projects. We've talked about that. We've been dealing with that for forever. that's nothing new, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in the budget report a little bit later. You know, really, because we're an enterprise fund, you know, partly by our own doing, but partly because we're an enterprise fund and we have our own revenues and our own expenses, we're kind of in this bubble, or we've got these firewalls up where you know, there's this a misunderstanding of sorts that we're supposed to do everything all entirely on our own, and so we've been left to our own devices to do all of our maintenance and all of our capital programs, where it really ought to be Public Works doing that kind of stuff. We pay a cost allocation to do some of it, but the bulk of it, you know, the capital planning and the engineering and the putting out to bid these projects, that's really a Public Works function. And so we're looking at, you know, possibly how we pull in Public Works and help out with that. And so that's one of the things they identified. And then outdated harbor office equipment and office spaces. You know, our office, we used to be a division of Public Works, and Public Works was in that office with us. And over the years, you know, we became our own department and we stayed there, but, you know, we've long outgrown it. It was never built for the purpose that it's being used for now, at least not with the number of the staffing and responsibilities, so trying to figure out how to solve that. And then operationally, like I said, there's sort of these firewalls up, and there's, you know, I think in the last 10 years we've made a lot of good progress on bringing other departments in. I mentioned the police officer that's assigned to the waterfront, things like that. But we need to do more. We need to do better in bringing, like, say, Public Works, community development, and being more collaborative within the departments instead of harbor departments that are being on its own island. So, you know, lack of knowledge and resource sharing across departments. So we've been trying to address that. And then really, you know, what the harbor department's responsible for paying, and what the general fund's responsible for paying, and the cost allocation, and trying to sort all that out. Another thing they identified. And then training and certifications. You know, we're down two people. You know, keeping up with, you know, the essentials, you know, really keeping up with the essentials and really doing those things, but doing some of the other things that we need to do, like training, professional development, we just haven't been able to do because we haven't had the staffing time to be able to do it, because we're so limited on what we can do. So training and certifications were one thing that's identified. And then on the organizational structure and staffing, you know, I think they found pretty widely that you know, the community likes us, and I'm not just, you know, patting myself on the back, that we've got a great reputation, and that's been a hard-earned reputation. We're out there working hard and saying yes and getting things done. That's been to our detriment as well, because we say yes to everything, and it's hard to get things done when you're saying yes to everything that comes along. So, you know, trying to figure out how to prioritize and strategic plan a little better is something they identified. And then, but keep, you know, sort of the hometown style that we are, you know, our accommodating, old Morro Bay, you know, get the job done in a friendly manner. You know, just how do we maintain that and not lose that heritage? Short staff, we already talked about that. Succession planning, you know, kind of like training, it's just something we haven't had time for. Haven't had the ability to do that, so we've just, you know, kept our heads down and gotten the job done. And then competing priorities, Bob talked about that with the EML's position. You know, we're a business partner with our leaseholder, but we're also an enforcer, but we're also trying to help them develop, but then we're also the city, and we're supposed to enforce the city's codes, and so we get caught in this weird dual role a lot of times, and how do you separate those? And you know, what Bob spoke about, you know, speaks to that with having a role that separates those things off and separating the business from the political. And so the lease policy group identified that when we worked on that, and so we're and so did TCUFOE, and so how do we rebuild our department now that I'm leaving? They do job interviews today for my replacement. We'll see what happens. But, you know, how do we rebuild our department back up and figure out what the positions are and what they're going to be doing moving in the future? And then the business and lease management. I mean, Bob covered a lot of that. You know, keeping up with auditing and financial management. You know, we've got a pretty antiquated system of lease management. There's no real... you know, we've got a marina management program that kind of manages the water side that the leases fit into, but it doesn't fit very well. We've bought a new program that we're integrating right now that'll hopefully make that better. It's cloud-based. Our old program is not. And there's no good interface between us and the finance department when it comes to the finance part. It's a manual interface between the two. So it takes a lot of Lori's time, and it takes a lot of a couple people up in finance's time. And so how do we streamline that? We're working on that. I spoke a little bit of, you know, tension between lease management and code enforcement. That's what I spoke about earlier, sort of the you're an advocate, but you're an enforcer at the same time, and how do you separate those two? You know, like I said, when I was hired as director, the plan was to hire a business manager that was going to focus on lease management and take that off my plate. Well, that didn't work out, and it ended up on my plate. That's not where my expertise was. My expertise was on the water side. So how do we correct that? How do we get that ship back upright? Insufficient reserve funds for capital projects, that's the whole funding thing, you know, and our revenues versus expenses, and how do we get get more revenues out of what we have and new revenues of maybe some untapped sources out there. Digitizing, I mean, that's a couple other, you know, sort of streamlining or efficiency things in there. You know, digitizing our lease agreements and getting things, you know, instead of when I need to go research some history, I got to look in a banker's box, things like that. So they're looking at all different aspects of it. And then, you know, preparing for and sustained and increased tourism. As we know, COVID created this weird bump in tourism, and it seems like the rest of the country seemed to have discovered the Central Coast all of a sudden. Now they all want to come here. While we're anticipating that's going to back off a little bit, it's not going away anytime soon, and we've got to figure out how to move into the future with all that. So that's kind of, you know, basically the findings of what TCUFOE came up with. And we're trying to incorporate those as best we can moving forward and adopt those things and rebuild our department and make it bigger, better, faster, stronger. Any questions on that part? I can take a water break.
Eric, yeah, just a couple questions. The study itself for the TCOFE, that was funded by the city or by the harbor?
It was...
Well, actually, let me tell you why I'm asking is so a lot of times if you sponsor a study, you take the results more seriously. And so I'm assuming that, you know, to do any of these, you know, if I look at page 7, there's some opportunities, some things to do. I'm assuming that, like, the city manager and the city council would have to approve that. And so I assume this has been, you know, Scott and the city council has reviewed this at this
point. Yeah, it was in the budget. It was a city council approved item. I'm not going to swear to it, but I think it came out of the city manager's budget.
Okay. And so presumably Scott Collins is like, yeah, these are great ideas. You know, he would be the one, along with the city council, that would say, yeah, let's move forward with 1, 6, and 7. Is that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we presented this to the city council at the last meeting.
Okay.
A couple of weeks ago, and And obviously, you know, the city manager getting on board and funding this and being a part of it. I mean, he was a part of it from creation of you know, sort of the task list and been a part of it as we've gone through our work with TCUFOE over the last few months. And so, yeah, he's fully bought into it, fully invested, and the council is too. And so
hopefully
we can move forward with some good results.
Because I didn't make it to the council meeting for that particular one. How was it received?
It was received well. We took it mostly under the context of, you know, under any organizational chart, we need to add a Harbor Patrol officer back in. When we did our reiteration, when we didn't get the business manager, one thing we did do was we created a patrol supervisor position, because I basically vacated that when I went to the department head position.
Yep.
And we filled that from within. And so one patrol officer, and that's Becca, she moved to that. Mm-hmm. We didn't backfill the patrol position.
Yeah.
So, you know, we made her a supervisor, but didn't give her a position back to do all the jobs that she was doing out on the water. So kind of, you know, cut ourselves off to the knees a little bit. And so any org chart is going to bring a patrol officer back. So we brought to the council 2 weeks ago, and they approved hiring of another Harbor Patrol officer position to backfill that, to at least start getting us back on our operational feet.
Okay, so as the new council comes back up to speed and your replacement, they'll kind of take ownership of moving this forward. Okay,
yeah. And with a new council stepping in December,
you
know, obviously we can't get too far ahead of that, because we got to wait for them to come in, because it's a new council, and they're going to be in here for 2 years, so we got to make sure we're aligned with where they want to go.
Absolutely. All right, thank you. That's all I have. Sharice.
Another question? Mary?
Yeah, I had a question. On page 3 of the report, it says the Morro Bay Offshore Wind Auction begins in December 2022. The project will uniquely position the Harbor Department as a maintenance provider if awarded. Can you explain why the offshore wind would require additional maintenance from the Harbor Department?
Yeah, I'm going to read that section here.
It's the first sentences of the last paragraph.
Yeah, I see it. I just want to see exactly what they're stating before I answer it.
You're asking Eric to answer this guy's statement.
No, well, not quite. I'm just wondering, like, I mean, and if you don't think that this is accurate, but do you have any idea, like, what could have been referenced here, or would you agree with that? Do you see the Harbor Department taking on additional maintenance responsibilities as part of the offshore wind?
I do. I think I do understand that. That second sentence will be uniquely positioned. Uniquely positioned the Harbor Department as a maintenance provider. I'm not sure that's the right wording. The auction is next week, December 6th, with Bowen, Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, and they're putting the three lease sites out to bid. Assuming they're awarded, and assuming the three companies that are awarded continue to move forward through the planning and permitting and construction phases of all that, and there's a lot of moving parts to the whole process, there's two types of harbors that are going to be needed to service that industry. One is where the machines are built. You know, the machines are basically the size of a baseball diamond, and up to 1,000 feet tall at the tip of the blade. So obviously that's not going to happen in Morro Bay. But Morro Bay, we anticipate us being in operations and maintenance base, meaning where the smaller ships go back and forth to the wind farm, much like the oil industry has down in Santa Barbara. You got the crew boats that go back and forth every day, and every once in a while a supply boat will come in and bring in supplies. We're anticipating Morro Bay being an O&M port, or being a good candidate for an O&M port for the industry to come in and operate out of Morro Bay. So there will be more facilities if that happens and Morro Bay becomes an O&M port. You know, exactly who builds it and how the whole and where it all goes is obviously yet to be seen. There's a fair amount of studying going on right now to look at that. But the infrastructure that will need to be created for that, the wharves and on-land infrastructure, will need to be maintained, built and maintained. Who exactly builds it and maintains it, that's yet to be seen. But, you know, obviously if we bring in, you know, ABC Wind Company and they build a new wharf or a new pier, and they're going to be responsible for maintaining it. So I don't see the harbor department being the maintainer of all that infrastructure on the water and on the land. It's going to be part of the leasing process, and those lessees will be responsible for it. So I think the harbor department being a maintenance provider, I think that was probably supposed to be the intention. That was Morro Bay will be a maintenance and operation port. Maybe they just didn't word it that well.
Thanks. And then I just had one other one. Long-term opportunity number 3 on page 7 brings up identifying the purpose and function of the Harbor Advisory Board. And I didn't necessarily see, like, a challenge that was tied to that. Was there any kind of, like, unique challenge that was or opportunity that was identified specific to the way that the Harbor Department and the Harbor Advisory Board are currently working together?
No, I don't think so. I think what that was getting at was, you know, how do we and Sean brought up a second ago, how do we best utilize the Harbor Advisory Board to focus on, you know, like they say, the critical opportunities and the management and all the other things, you know, best. Let's use this as an opportunity to reinvent that relationship between the city and the department and the Harbor Advisory Board to get the Harbor Advisory Board, you know, as involved as it can be, helping out.
Thanks.
Sure. I'll just ask one question. This is from page 3. The Harbor Department is structured as an enterprise fund and operates from revenues generated from Tideland's properties they manage. I guess my question is, to what extent did the consultant scrutinize our 2020 lease management policy, or were they looking more at, like, practical implementation over the years of lease management?
I don't think they looked at the lease policy per se and tried to make any sort of judgment or recommendations on how to implement or utilize it as best we can. I think what they're getting at is, you know, make sure you're staffed and structured such that you can do all the things that you want to do in the lease policy.
Thank you.
Therese, what action are you anticipating on this business item?
Receive and file, but questions and little bit of a discussion perhaps after, but it's not a point or a voting on it.
Are you asking us for a motion to approve this study, or?
Not right now, because we're not through everybody yet.
Okay.
And I don't think we need to take a motion to receive and file it. Did you have any questions for Eric? Lori, do you have any questions for Eric?
I don't have any real questions, just a comment which I spoke to earlier. The part I did like of this was the friendliness of the Harbor Department, and Eric, I think you're to be commended for that. As you know, we work up and down the coast, and we're treated more as friends than, I don't know how you would say it. Other harbors are much more rigid. That's what I'm looking for. And we've been doing business with the same harbors for a long time. And we appreciate the non-rigidity, if that makes sense. And for the life of me, I could just be dumb here. I have never understood how come the Harbor Patrol gets the leaseholder things. I realize it's the Harbor Department, but it's just like waterfront businesses. It just doesn't mesh in my brain, but that's my brain.
Chris, do you have any questions?
Yeah, Lori, I agree with you, by the way, on that the structure. It's odd that the Harbor Department takes anyway. But perhaps the new management position might solve that. The other thing I was just curious, and this is just to be funny, apparently the individual interviews with the harbor director, city manager, on and on, were conducted along with the harbor advisory board members. What did I miss? Has anybody, did these people talk to us? They did. Okay.
I mean,
I'm done.
Can I ask who? Can I ask who was consulting that? I guess I had a follow-up question on, it says Morro Bay citizens and Morro Bay advisory board members were talked to. I wasn't talked to, but I was just curious.
So what was the time frame when they started and when they finished? Because that could help perspective.
And I don't know who exactly every name they consulted with. I think the council agenda item was approved in April. They probably got started in June-ish, early summer, and worked through the summer into August, September, and kind of started wrapping up and writing things up in October.
So you don't know any harbor advisory board members, per se, that they set up times with?
I do not.
Okay. I will say that I was in and out of the office a couple times, and I saw them shadowing, and they asked me a couple questions, but not like a sit-down interview, so I can say to that. So.
And there may be former Harbor Advisory Board members, too, that they might have.
Correct. That's why I was wondering about the time frame. Okay. Anybody? Okay. So, all right. So I'm going to say a couple things. With COVID the way that it was, I went into war zone mode, and I know that city across the board asked for cuts from everybody. It was pretty drastic, and it felt pretty it was a struggle, and everybody kind of came to the call and worked even harder during that time. And I know that the harbor department didn't increase anything during any of that time, and just each individual that was still there took on more work. So kudos to you guys for doing it for as long as you did. And it's upsetting that, you know, you have to ask in order to get another position just to get to where you were before. So, and you've tried really hard to find new revenue streams. One of the things about me being a business owner is that I know that it's really time-consuming when you first start up something. So at the point where you started up the camping and boat storage, there was a lot of work and time that went into it from the Harbor Department to establish those revenue streams. And unfortunately, they were taken away because of some community outcries about it. And so, anyway, I'm just saying that I know that you guys worked really hard to establish those, even at a time where you were really short-staffed. And any of the entities or people who filed against having the camping or boat storage, that we should definitely do this workshop that I was talking about, and I'll talk more about it, and invite all of them, because it's important to know that we need more funds for staff and for infrastructure, and that has to come from somewhere. You can't just tax people more, and so, anyway, there's that. Then I do know that when, as they're going into our new city council and everybody's seated come in January, I plan to go personally to the council and tell them how important that the Harbor Advisory Board could be as a tool for the new crew that is on staff, on the board, on the council. All right. And that we are a resource. All of the grant work that you guys have been working on and all of the history that we have and the lease policy things that we've worked on, hopefully they can find ways to create goals and requests of the HAB that could help them in their time because coming onto the city council fresh and new, Carla has been on the city council before. Hopefully they will look at the Harbor Advisory Board as a respectable entity where they could have us do the research and come back with our feedback that reflects the community that we are here to represent. And let's see. Because what we've had with the Harbor Advisory Board is a situation where the council sets the goals and we only answer to what it is that we're asked. And we haven't been asked all that much. And so entities like the GAC, Governmental Affairs Committee, and the Embarcadero Master Leaseholders and the Chamber took it into their own hands to give them the feedback that they didn't ask for, and they listened, and they respected it. And I would like to have the Harbor Advisory Board have the same ability to say and establish criteria for them to use when they make their decisions for the City Council. All right, so I don't have any questions. Anybody else have anything to say before we receive and file this?
Yeah, one quick comment. In looking at these recommendations here, one thing I don't see is perhaps hiring somebody to go out and look for grants. I know that there has to be grants out there, and I think that person would pay for itself.
Eric, are they still working on somebody to be a grant writer for the city of Morro Bay?
Currently, our current strategy right now, I know there was talk of hiring a specific position within the city to do grant writing and exploration and execution. I think right now we're working with our lobbyist or political consultant in Sacramento at the state level. They've identified a number of grants so far. In fact, I think the Coleman Beach project might have come out of something they identified and helped us with. So they're engaged right now with that. Whether or not we're going to actually have a position within the city, I think, is yet to be seen. And if you don't mind, you brought up the recommendations. I want to step through those real quick just to give you an idea of where we're at on the recommendations and just kind of work through the list. And if you got any questions on those, we kind of talked about the opportunities, the challenges, and all that. So on the facilities, establish a preventive maintenance schedule for the existing structures, piers, and docks. As you know, we've got our capital needs list that the budget committee's worked with. Well, the city's also hired hiring an engineering firm to do a needs assessment of all the city's infrastructure, and about half of that funding is going down to harbor for all our harbor infrastructure. So that's where we're going to start with, and they'll figure out what the current status and state of everything is, and then they'll come up with recommendations on schedule for the existing infrastructure. So that is being worked on. B, collaborate with community development and tide and stress owners to create new projects to enhance and economic development of the waterfront. That's really a bigger master planning thing. I don't think we've implemented anything new there recently, with the exception of the city still working with a developer for the Market Plaza project, the one up behind the old Stasio's building, behind the dirt lot back there where the stairway is, Centennial Stairway, that whole project. That's still working with a private developer to do a pretty major redevelopment there, and so that's underway. That's the only thing that's going on with the city right now, not really our department. That's all community development. C, partner with Public Works to help oversee capital improvement projects and needed on the waterfront. I spoke of that earlier with our new Public Works director, now finally able to spend some more time and attention on things other than the wastewater plant and the wharf. We're starting to have engaged with that department and seeing where their role might be in our future. Like I said, I think it makes sense for Public Works to just take over our capital program. We'll still pay for it and pay for that infrastructure, but Public Works really should be running it. So, that's in its early stages. Renovate and upgrade the Harbor Department building. I talked about that a little bit earlier. We're looking at a couple options right now. Possibly taking down our building and getting some modulars We looked at containers, the whole tiny home thing going on. That doesn't look like a great option, but maybe bringing in some modulars. It's not a permanent fix. The permanent fix is obviously probably several million dollars, so, but, you know, until we can figure out how to fund all that, modulars may be the better way to get our building upgraded. It's got, potential health and safety issues in it. It's old. It's not very functional, so we're looking at that right now. The next section, organizational structure and staff A, expand the organization. We talked about six people and trying to get back to eight. They're recommending convert the patrol supervisor to a manager position, create a new harbor patrol officer position. We just got that council approved. And then what Bob was talking about earlier, create a new harbor business manager position and figure out how we manage the leases. So, the way we're approaching that right now is bringing on the new harbor director, my replacement, and have them be part of the process and the conversation to do that, because we don't know yet who that person will be and where their expertise is going to be. And so we didn't want to design, number one, didn't want to design an org chart around me because I'm leaving, but we also don't want to design a hypothetical org chart around a harbor director that we don't have yet. So until we get them on board and know where their expertise lie, then we can build the org chart on down the line. So we're going to bring that person on. They'll be part of that. Equitable pay, that's really across the city's the city board. They're doing a classification and compensation study right now across the city, including all the harbor department positions, and seeing where we stand in terms of pay equities, compared to other organizations. So that's underway right now. And then succession planning. I've spent the better part of the last few months, putting together my succession plan for who comes after me. We need to do a better job department-wise, not just, when somebody decides they're going to leave. So that's something that'll be hopefully coming along in the future. Operations and crew collaboration across city departments. I talked about that earlier. We're working a lot more closely with the police department, and we've always worked pretty closely with the fire department because of all the public safety stuff. But how do we work better with code enforcement, with community development, and helping our leaseholders, develop what they want to develop and those sorts of things. So those are, some things are already in the works, but we recognize there's more things we need to do there. B, improve finance management by working more directly with admin department team, and that's really, the whole finance department has turned over in the last year. Everybody is new from the director on down. And so how we fit into that and with our budgeting and our property management and our financial management and how we interface better with the finance department, that's all part of that, and making that more efficient to free up our time and so we don't spend as much time in the trenches doing that kind of stuff. And then C, upgrade and convert digital or paper to digital. I spoke about that earlier. At some point, Lori and I are working right now and going through all of our file boxes. We've probably 60 bankers' boxes, 60 or 75 banker boxes, full of stuff going back into the 1960s. And so cleaning out all the stuff we don't need anymore and organizing what's left and then eventually digitizing it so we can have better file retrieval, which is, it's just an efficiency thing. And then the final box, business and lease management, create robust titles, trust, leaseholder, customer relationship, and management system. That's our financial management system and working with finance, but that's also, something that Bob spoke about and I spoke about, figuring out, the two different hats we have to wear, the business partner versus the landlord, and how to get a better relationship going with our leaseholders. B, explore revenue generating resources. That's something we've looked at as a Harbor Advisory Board forever. We'll keep doing that. In fact, we'll talk a little bit about that in the budget item. How do we adequately fund this department? And update the Harbor Department website. Obviously, websites are what a lot of organizations live and die by now. Our website, every time we update it, it gets nice and modern, but then it kind of slips into obscurity, and 10 years later, we update it again. So really, how do we use our website, not just for branding, but for partnering with our leaseholders and helping them help themselves, in terms of, what might be, available for space lease and up for redevelopment. So just things like that, and just getting out on the internet, and which is where everybody operates now, and just becoming more efficient, and you know, hopefully raise everybody's boats with revenues and whatnot. So that's kind of it. That's kind of where we're at on that whole thing, and then we'll probably end up bringing in TCUFOE down the line to help us implement some of this stuff. And part of the team building, you know, change is difficult sometimes, but change is good. So, you know, we'll, as I move on and the new person comes in and we rebuild our department, we'll probably be looking at TCUFOE to help us build us back up to where we need to be.
So one of the things that I asked you earlier, yesterday or whatnot, was about upgrading computers. So on this list of recommendations, has anything been set in motion or has happened since they did this report to move in this direction of the recommendations?
Well, I went over, you know, where we were on some of them. Some of them are definitely have moved forward. Some of them are going to wait for my successor to come in and future planning and the new council. Obviously, like I said, we don't want to get too far ahead of things because we need to bring the new council on board and make sure we're still going in the direction that they want to go. So, but, yes, we've implemented and in the middle of implementing some things. Some we just haven't gotten to yet, but some we have. So, yeah, I'm hopeful that it's not just going to be a document that sits up on a shelf and then nobody picks up again. We're already working on it, and I intend to continue with that. And I'm not going anywhere after retirement. I'll still be nipping at the heels. Maybe I'll come in and be a public commenter here.
All right. Cool. So with this one, we can just receive and file. Should we do a motion? Actually, I should open it for public comment, but in that last 5 minutes, we lost our two people who were in the audience. So I'm going to open it up for a public comment right now. Hyland, do we have anybody online or zoomed in?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, so I'm going to close public comment on item B1. And again, do we need to do a motion or can we just move on to the next one? Okay, so we're going to just move on.
You do because it's a consent calendar, but on these... Right. No, we don't need a motion to receive and file.
Okay. All right. So we're going to move on to agenda item B2, which is the update on parking management paid parking ad hoc committee. I know that Board Member Myers is the chair of that, and I did have some outreach, so I'm going to let you start it.
Okay. Since the last time we did try to do a position paper, we tried to get it in, an update to it from our last meeting. Spoke to Scott Collins. He wasn't comfortable with some of the verbiage in there, especially with the new council coming on board, so we've kind of put it on the back burner. We have revisited a little bit, but not as far as I'd like to publish it at this point. I know Charisse has done some additional work outside of that.
Yes, since we started the ad hoc committee, we have had some liveaboards who were part of it to be part of that community voice become landlubbers. So now it really doesn't affect them, so we're in search of another representative to be on the ad hoc committee that is a liveaboard. So out there, anybody who wants to contribute to the ad hoc committee, please get a hold of us via our city email. Which is online, and there's a couple other spots there. Maybe we would be interested in getting some new people on the ad hoc committee. This last 2 months, I've just done a lot of outreach and talking to people and educating and learning and listening. So we're putting a pin in it while we wait for the city council to change and harbor director. There's a lot of moving parts right now, but as far as the city manager is concerned, this is going to take a little back burner for a little while. So that's all we have. And then anybody has any questions or wants to add anything? Seeing no questions. All right, we're going to just open it up for public comment. Seeing nobody in the audience. Hyland, do we have anybody online?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, I'm going to close public comment for item B2, and we're going to move on to item B3, which is update from the Marine Services Ad Hoc Committee on Committee's recent activities. That's Chairperson Vail.
There are no effective recent activities in discussing the little boatyard that we have, the single boat boatyard. Joe says he would love a bigger crane. Joe says, but we can never afford it or pay for it. Joe says, I'm 78 years old. I don't know how much longer I'm going to do this. So from the old boatyard concept that we don't have one to the concept of what can we do for the little boatyard that might help us, I kind of feel like I'm butting my head against the wall. Nobody wants to say, here's a space. You know, nobody's got $250,000 to give a somewhat reluctant boatyard operator and or the people who own the place. It's just a place of no interest. Everything else is pretty much the same status as it was 6 months ago as far as diesel mechanics, electricians, repair people. And that's it from my perspective at this point. Things seem to be going smoothly as far as ice, as far as fish cleaning, as far as happy recreational boaters at this point. Thanks.
Any questions or comments? Well, thank you very much for outreaching to him and seeing where that led us. And it's something that's still near and dear to a lot of members in the community for the Morro Bay Harbor to have a haul out of larger scale. So hopefully that person who wants to be a part of that our company comes in, and if they do, we're here to support and aid in any way, shape, or form we can. Okay, so I'm going to open it for a public comment, not seeing anybody in the audience. Hyland, do we have anybody online?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. Okay, seeing no public comment for item B3, we're going to move forward to the meat of our business items, or the last big topic, which is update from the Finance Budget Ad Hoc Committee. So I'm going to start with Mary to ask what's the update on the budget, and then we can move on to the fiscal year review.
Yeah, we did not meet formally with Thanksgiving. I provided input to Eric regarding recommended usage of surplus revenue, and we discussed that. I think one of the main opportunities that we have right now are grants, both for the revetments as well as the launch ramp. The biggest item with the grants for the revetments is that we require matching funds. And so I think a big goal will be, once the new city council comes on board, discussing with them setting aside funds that can be used for us to apply to those grants, because we think we have a really good chance with the use cases we have here. So a little bit of a holding pattern on what we see as some of our largest grant opportunities as the new city council members come. Also, getting the new harbor director on board with those. And that's it for me. Cal, Sean, did you guys have anything to add?
Okay, so for the other part, Eric, are you going to lead that?
Sorry, I missed that. I was reading.
Are you going to do the presentation of the recap?
Yeah, I suppose I should.
There we go.
I was reading something on the report. Caught me flat-footed, sorry.
Huh? It's okay.
So I want to give you a quick recap of now that the last year's budget, FY 21-22, is pretty much closed out. I'm not sure it's completely audited and done, but It's pretty much closed out. You know, revenues and expenses are in. We've still got some or had some outstanding lease site revenues that got applied to this year because they came in so late that they couldn't go to the previous year. So these numbers are off a little bit, but not by anything really significant that would make any big difference. So I just want to kind of go through a quick recap of it. You know, our revenues last year did exceed expenses by about $600,000, which sounds great. Like, oh, good, our problem solved. We got all this extra revenue. Well, not so fast. It might seem like that's great, but we're still, as I spoke earlier, we're two full-time positions down. And, you know, that excess revenue was really a COVID-related phenomenon. And, we expect revenues to stay up, like I said earlier, because a lot of people seem to be coming here now and there's a lot more activity. We're also expecting that to drop back down as well, depending on what happens with this recession that's forecast or not. But, and Sharice, you can attest to this, but, you know, a lot of our leaseholders are already reporting just this past summer revenues are down anywhere between 15% to 20% from the previous summer, just as a matter of course. And so we'll see what happens next year, but we're already expecting things to drop down. So that 600,000 number is definitely not going to be the norm. The other part of it, well, I guess I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. So the actual revenues and expenses we had budgeted versus actual. We achieved about 26% over budgeted on the revenue side, which was great. $2.1 million budgeted, $2.6 million actual, almost $2.7 million, which is wonderful. But again, it's doesn't mean everything's solved. We've still got some problems. And then the expense side, we budgeted just over $2 million, and we spent, you know, a little bit less than what we budgeted, you know, $60,000 less, which is great because we're cheap and we don't spend. We're pretty frugal in our spending, and so our staff is great at, you know, controlling things. And so and I like to say we're pretty good at budgeting. So we underspent, which is great, and, you know, so the net result was a little over $600,000. Some of those expenses was 150 one-time transfer to capital projects. So, you know, that makes the picture look a little brighter, but, you know, we do transfer about $130,000 a year into capital programs and capital expenses, so that's kind of tempers that a little bit. But again, the net positive was, you know, frugality and a windfall that we don't think is going to expect it is going to happen again. Really looking forward, we think with our 5-year forecasting that we've done with our financial partners and with the financial department, we're probably going to be more in the $250,000 to $350,000 range of excess revenues over expenses, and that assumes that the COVID spike is over and we're going to get back to some degree of normalcy, whatever normal is. Small, consistent investment in capital needs, about $130,000 a year. Continued support from the measures money, the sales tax money, measures Q and E. Currently, we're getting about just a little under $240,000 of ongoing expenses from that sales tax revenue. Where we, you know, and this is our second year going. I think the first year we got about $150,000, so the council increased it this year. So there'll be continued support, hopefully, from the sales tax revenues, which is great. Hopefully, be more in the future. Hint, hint. But you know, it's up to the council to make those priorities. So we'll see what happens in the future. Trying to maintain a harbor fund reserve balance of 20% or more. Currently, we don't have that balance, but we're hopefully going to get there at some point. And that's, you know, really a reserve fund for emergencies that you just set aside and never use. I know that going into COVID, we didn't have any harbor reserve fund. The general fund did, and they spent a good amount of it. Fortunately, they got a lot of it back with the COVID funding that came out of the state and federal governments, the COVID relief. So, but that's what reserve funds are for, but we really don't have one. And then increases in PERS contributions, meaning the retirement contributions for employees that, you know, as we know, it the PERS retirement money, the money's, it's complicated, but the PERS is, they were not collecting historically their forecasts, you know, 5 years and beyond for the revenues they made off of all the contributions they got were very, very rosy, and they didn't collect enough revenues from cities like us to account for what the retirement formulas were going to be, because they thought all these great revenues would just keep happening forever, and obviously they didn't. And then, the big financial economic crash, and then so now, by state law, all these cities and counties and all these entities that contract with PERS are having to catch up and repay all that money that they didn't pay in because PERS thought they were going to make so much money on our money, and they didn't. So, the bad financial decisions of PERS in the past we're now paying for, so we're going to see several more years of increasing PERS contributions for that. So those are the assumptions that are made, and we're thinking $250,000 to $350,000 a year is basically what our excess revenues over expenses are going to be in the longer term. Again, it doesn't address where we're at with our that's not addressing where we are with our staffing or how we really deal with the big capital financial picture. So still need that work to do on that end. As Bob spoke earlier, some of that will possibly come from better lease management and better cost recovery out of our leases. Part of that's going to come hopefully from grants. Grants is not going to solve the problem. Because most grants are competitive and you don't always get them, but grants can be part of the picture. And then, increased revenues, new revenue sources, new and creative revenue sources. And so that's the things that we need to pursue and we'll continue to pursue. Any questions on that before I move to the next section? Cal.
Two questions. The 20% reserve, I'm assuming that's like a savings account, so that's roughly like $400,000, 20% of your budget.
Yeah, I mean, our operating budget is, 2.?
Yeah, so it's a little over 400,000.
It's not going to continue to be 2.6. I think our budget this year is 2.3-something, so, 20%
basically,
of that.
Okay.
Basically 400-ish thousand, 400 to 500,000.
And where are we at right now? Or where are you at right now?
I'm afraid you're going to ask that. I don't know.
Okay.
The finance director's out on maternity leave right now, so I
no worries.
Don't have it.
It's less than 400,000, I assume.
It's less than
400,000. Okay. And then the second question, and this may not be the right venue, but with the BESS and the windmills, is that another revenue opportunity, or would that replace any of the money from the power plant? It's speculative.
It potentially is. Again, who builds all the infrastructure and how all that works is yet to be seen, but we anticipate at the end of the day there's going to be new leases out there for these wind operators, assuming they're coming to town and doing the operations and maintenance ports. And so there'll be leases and lease revenues from them. The power cable, we're assuming, comes to town because there's the grid connection, which is one of the reasons this area is attractive for that. And there'll be a lease for that. So, yeah, we anticipate increased lease revenues. And then, again, assuming this all comes to town, you got those big ships operating. They got to buy fuel. So there's fuel dock revenues. They're going to need to, have their, overall economic revenues that we'd foresee out of that with boat mechanics and bottom cleaners and all that stuff. We anticipate all that's going to bring in revenue overall, but there'll be direct revenues as well.
Build a couple docks right off the intake building, and we're good to go. All right. Thank you. That's all I have.
Yeah, I had one question. I'm looking at the budgeted revenues versus actual, and we're 26-27% over budget. Is my understanding correct that waterfront master leaseholders can charge their subtenants a base monthly rent and a gross percent monthly rent and collect that, but then not remit that to us at the Harbor Enterprise Fund or report that? I'm just kind of curious, how does a monthly budgeting process go? Or are we surprised at year end with the big amount?
I'll start with the last part first. A little bit surprised with the amount, but given the level of activity and just people in town and, year-round for 2 years, day and night, you saw the masses of people and the number of people out at the Rock, it wasn't that surprising. We knew it was going to happen. Like I said, going into COVID, we thought the world was going to end and everything was going to shut down for a year and nothing came back, but it all came screaming back. It came back in a different kind of way, even when when people were, you know, still quarantining, but they're still getting out in the open. Well, we have a lot of open to get out into, so all the people came. So that, a little surprising at the degree of it this past year. You know, after last year, we thought, wow, that was crazy. We'll never see that again. And last year overcame it, so we don't anticipate that coming again. As far as the lease payments, you know, our subtenants and master tenants, you know, we don't get into, nor do we see what they make from their tenants and how they structure their leases, whether they just have a flat space rental that they do with them, or whether they collect the percent based on how much exceeds the minimum, or they just collect it and pay it as a pass through to us. We don't see how that's structured, nor do we get in the middle of that. We just know that, you know, there's a minimum rent that's easy to calculate because it's based on the appraised value, and then there's the CPI kickers, and every year it's pretty easy to estimate that. And Lori helps me dramatically with that in the springtime as we go into budgeting, because we're able to figure out what the CPI is. And then with the percent rents, it's a little bit of seat of the pants. We look at what the last couple of years' performance was. We try to look at what the city's sales tax consultants and the city's financial advisors are forecasting out there, you know, and what they're seeing, and apply it to what our percent rents were, you know, the past couple of years. And then we say, well, we think it's going to be similar. And then we'll get very conservative and still ratchet it back, which is one of the reasons why it exceeded by 26.5%. Because even though we might have been thinking, you know, we're going to do really good this year, last year, we still ratchet it back because we don't want to overexceed. Because if you budget for that on the revenue side, you budget for that on the expense side, and the revenues don't come in, that doesn't work. So we're always very conservative on it. And so all that combined together, and part of it was the, you know, last year was our first year of not paying back the South T Pier loan. That loan is over with. So that was $134,000. So that brought in a little bump. So all that combined made for a big, big boost last year.
One more question. The ballpark, did the budgeted amount of revenue at $2.1 million include roughly a 3 or 4% CPI number on average, as opposed to maybe the actual, did we apply like a 7, 8, 9% CPI?
Our leases are all structured to go by the CPI as put out by the Department of Labor. All urban consumers, I want to say it's LA, Riverside, the Southern California, the general all consumer CPI number. And so we go by that. Our master, and so of our revenues, about 75% comes off the leases. The other 25% is the slips and piers and all the boating related stuff. That gets a CPI kicked on it as well. And it's based on the master fees CPI number, which is, again, based on a Department of Labor number, but I'm not sure which index. It might be the same index.
Is it significantly higher this year, given inflationary environment, or is it just ballpark? Like,
I'm anticipating when we go in next spring and start applying our CPIs, that it's going to be a pretty big 2-3%. Has been pretty standard going back. You know, when the economic downturn happened, it was the opposite. You know, we actually, some of our lease revenues went down because of the CPI. They adjust down as well as up. But 2-3% is pretty standard. I suspect this coming spring, it's going to be a bigger number because of the crazy inflation we've had.
Thank you.
I had the CPI. It's not as a question too. I would say it would be safe to budget 5% over above last year. And I know that you met with some of the leaseholders to gauge the yearly fluctuations, how it didn't go down pre-COVID numbers. So, and what was my other question? Oh, what was the percent? Well, how much did the city take in from Measure Q and E last year? Do you know that?
I'm not going to swear by it, but I think combined, I want to say it's $4 million.
Cool. Okay. So, roughly it's 20% of that sales tax comes from Tidelands Properties. Is that what
about
I heard?
So the sales tax reporting we get divides the city up into four sections. One is the Embarcadero, which is both sides of the Embarcadero, not just the lease side. I don't know if it goes up to like Blue Sail Inn and Dorns. I suspect it captures that as well because that's the Embarcadero environment. Then there's the Morro Bay Boulevard, you know, the downtown section is the second section. And then there's the Quintana section, Albertsons, Rite Aid, all through there. And then there's North Morro Bay, which obviously captures everything, you know, at the north end. And so in the Embarcadero section, about 20% of the city's overall sales tax comes from that section. Again, it's both sides of the road and I think up on the hill a little bit too.
Okay, I gotcha. Well, that's interesting. Okay, so anybody else have any other questions? All right, you move on to the next section.
Oh, Mary. Are we waiting to move on to the use of the revenues?
Yeah.
Okay,
Eric?
Okay, so that's kind of the picture of last year and what we're anticipating this year. Like I said, it looks really rosy and great, but it needs to be tempered with the reality of what's still kind of hanging out there. That said, you know, we've got, you know, about, you know, after we put some money into reserve fund, you know, roughly $500,000 of revenues over expenses. And what we do with that, I mean, obviously that's going to be up to the finance department and city council to ultimately recommend, you know, how we spend it, or if we spend it, if we even spend it. But, you know, obviously we've got some needs now, and so we're looking at some possibilities of where we might want to direct that. And so I want to look to the Harbor Advisory Board for maybe providing a little input on that. You know, currently from the capital standpoint, you know, this is one-time funding. We're considering it one-time funding, even though we think the you know, our revenues will, again, it's not going to be a surplus of $600K every year, but there'll be a $250 to $350. We're really treating this $500,000 as one-time revenue. It's not something we're going to program into ongoing expenses. That's the prudent way of handling it. So really that means capital. You know, what do we need on the capital end? You know, our number one listed priorities on the spreadsheets that we've been working with the committee and with the Harbor Advisory Board for the last 10 or so years, and is the list on here, the bullet points here. These aren't in priority or any order. These are just the way I picked them off the list as I've got them, probably more listed north to south than anything. But harbor office replacement, I spoke about that a little bit earlier with modulars. Our estimate on that's about $300,000. The Beach Street North slips replacement, about $800,000 for that. South slips are funded right now. We're currently working with our engineering and design team on getting those replaced and going through the planning and permitting, getting all that done. So the north slips are the next ones that are on tap in terms of priority, need, and their age. About $800,000 estimate on that. So north T-pier structural needs, we've got an estimate on that of about $3.8 million. For the North T-Pier, we put in a congressional ask for that, an earmark, what they're called now, or what they used to be called. I think they changed the name to congressionally directed funding, something that sounded a little cooler. But anyhow, it's still earmarks. We put in a $3.8 million ask for that to do all the structural needs on that pier that were identified in an engineering analysis a few years ago, replacing our docks, replacing the Coast Guard docks, replacing all the utilities on that pier, just really making it new. And ready for future use, you know, with the potential of offshore wind coming. So we put in a $3.8 million ask for that. Obviously, we don't have the funding for that. And Congressman Carverhall picked up 1.5 of that, and it's currently in the president's budget. A couple of weeks ago, we thought earmarks were going to go away with the change in parties in Congress, but it looks like earmarks are going to stay at least for one more year. So knock on wood, hopefully that survives the president's budget. I'm sure we're going to go into a continuing resolution because it's after October 1st. But at some point in the near future, the president will and Congress will approve the budget and we'll see if that $1.5 million survives. And so we'll prioritize where we think that needs to go on that pier and get some work done there. which will be great. So, which, you know, it's essentially a grant. But again, it's not guaranteed, so we'll see where that goes. Some South T Pier structural needs, about $95,000 on some sections of that pier. That pier burned down in what was it, 1989? We rebuilt it, and that was that South T Pier loan. The first section, about halfway going out the base leg, is still the old original wooden section. It didn't burn down, and so it was maintained as is, and then the new rest of the pier was built after that in the early 90s. But there's some structural needs on that old base leg to the tune of about $95,000. Seawall down at the end of Morro Bay, $3 million estimate on that. You know, that used to be under lease decades ago. Gene, what was that? Golden Tee? Back in the day. So in at Morro Bay now, that water lease is long gone. The in at Morro Bay doesn't operate it, doesn't manage it anymore. So we own that seawall, and that seawall is failing. So we've got an estimate on that of about $3 million. And then on the equipment list, replacing our second Harbor Patrol truck, we got COVID relief funding to replace our first truck. Our trucks are about 10 years old now, which you'd think, oh, it's only 10 years old. Our truck will last longer than that. When you drive them on the beach every day and the environment they live in, trucks last about 40 or 50,000 miles for us, and they need to be replaced. So we've got one. We got a surplus truck that came out of the fire department last year that was in better shape than our existing truck, but it's still in pretty bad shape. So we're looking to replace that second truck with some of that funding potentially. So those are the sort of the number one things we have listed in terms of age and condition on our capital spreadsheets. Looking at prioritizing, if we end up going in this direction and spending some of this one-time funding, this $500,000, how do we go in and prioritize it in terms of, you know, what are our top three priorities from a staff standpoint, what we're looking at? Obviously, you know, we're limited in funding and can't do everything, but what we would recommend would be the harbor office replacement, the South T Pier structural work, and then the Harbor Patrol truck, and then setting aside some seed money, I think as Mary brought up a minute ago, for grant writing. A lot of the grants out there require matching funds. In other words, if you apply for a $1 million grant for something, it's got a 20% matching requirement. You have to come up with $200,000. So a lot of those things are looking for shovel-ready and matching fund-ready applications, and so putting some money aside for that to be able to apply for some of that granting is going to get pretty important if we're going to be competitive. And we'll stick with that section, then we won't go into revenue generating quite yet. Questions?
Okay.
Comments?
Questions starting over here? No? Questions? Sean?
A couple questions. Can you describe the other than the age of the building, what in terms of capabilities of the Harbor Office are falling short?
What did you say? The building was the plans I have for it were done by the county before the city's incorporation, and it's the same building. So I think it was built in 1962, 63, 64, somewhere through there. It was built.
It was built not according to plans.
And it was not built according to plan. Gene has done some work with us trying to figure out some ways to maybe remodel it to help us make it more efficient. For I think everyone, you've probably all been in there. It's got a lot of common area. Well, it's in small rooms that everybody's off into, and so those spaces weren't designed really for you know, the number of people and our storage and staffing needs. There's no place for somebody to really go sit down and or go to a sink and wash out their dishes after they eat their lunch, or, you know, the refrigerator is in the patrol office room with everything else. There's no real break room. There's no, you know, no kitchen area. We had two restrooms. We converted one to a shower room, just so when sometimes we have people that get rescued, they need to get in a warm shower. When our people go out and do training or go out and get wet, you know, to rinse stuff off. And both restrooms are not ADA compliant. In fact, the whole building is not ADA compliant at this point, for staff or the public. And it's just, it's being all broken up. It's just, it's not efficient. It's there's not a good connection, you know, between the customer service part, and the patrol staff and the administrative staff that has to service them. And so when people come in to the front office and customers come in to the front office, there's not a good interface necessarily between them and the people they need to talk to. So, and then from the standpoint of personnel safety, knock on wood, we're well liked, I think, largely in the world. But there's also people that sometimes come in and get mad, and people that are potentially dangerous. And then, so how do you protect your staff from them is another question that this office doesn't adequately address. So, and then to remodel it, a locker room, you know, sort of arrangement with staff coming in, with patrol staff. A lot of times, like say, we change into training gear and then need a locker room to do that. We don't have a locker room. You know, everybody gets kicked out of one office and they close the door, and, you know, so Becca can go change or stuff like that. It's just not functional. So we looked at, you know, can we remodel those restrooms? And the cost to do that just got so prohibitive. It's on a concrete slab foundation, so plumbing obviously comes up out where it comes out, and that's not easy to move without cutting up the foundation. So it's just really not cost effective to try and retool that building to make it more efficient. And it'd be better to start with an empty shell to where you can design it to do what it needs to be doing and what it should be doing.
So the modular approach, how does that relate to demo or possibly expanded footprint of that space?
So the existing building has a little bit of room all around it, not really on the parking lot side, but it's got a little bit of room going towards the south on the restroom side. You got a few feet there that it could expand out into, a potential few feet to expand over onto the ocean side, and then we've got about 6 or 8 feet between us and the Coast Guard, and the Coast Guard's got a big firewall there, so you could essentially build right up to that. Modulars are generally, you know, set dimensions, 40 foot by 12, 24, 48, those sorts of things. So you kind of get stuck in those parameters, but we'll be able to maximize the modular use and then potentially put in kind of like what they've got at Krill's, a container, you know, a roll-up door container on the side to put our gear and storage needs, which are currently in the building, kind of the operational stuff, and to open up some more space. And file storage, you know, there's files we need fairly readily access to, but they don't all need to be in somebody's office. They could be, you know, in a storage, you know, room or container to the side. So we're looking at those possibilities.
One more question. Regarding the seawall at Morro Bay, am I correct that is a Tideland's lease site that we've chosen not to put out to bid? Is that correct?
It is a Tideland's lease site. The lease site, if you've been down there, you know, there's parking spaces that were right against the water, you know, right against the edge of the seawall. They're about 20 feet long. There's a fence up there now. That fence is roughly where the lease site ends, so it takes up those parking spaces. When the Inn at Morro Bay gave that lease up back in, I want to say it was the early to mid-90s, it was long after the, I don't know, Gene, when did those slips go away? 80s? 1980s probably?
Yeah, probably early 80s.
So when the slips went away, the Inn continued to maintain that lease, because they needed it and wanted it for the parking, but the seawall got to the point of failure to where they had to stop using that for parking. And then I think the Inn changed ownership, and the new owners weren't interested in maintaining that parking nor building anything on the water. And so basically it reverted back to the city. When the Inn did a major remodeling, they probably finished it 3 or 4 years ago, but they started in on it 6 or 7 years ago, the permitting, and they did a bunch of remodeling in all their existing buildings. We put a permit condition on them that required them to put an access easement from the street down through their parking lot to that lease site, which they recorded. So we do have access easement to it. So in theory, we could build something down there on the water, have parking above on the seawall area, rebuild the seawall, and have access through their private property to it and not have that associated with the inn. Obviously, it'd probably be more beneficial for the inn to lease it and make that part of their operations. I did have interest from a previous manager at the inn. This was probably 3 or 4 years ago now. He's since moved on. The corporation was potentially interested in taking that lease back up, but they were waiting on finishing up getting that whole remodel done, and then that manager moved on, and so you know that all went silent since then.
So that sort of leads to my last question, I guess. If what could you foresee happening if we chose to move forward with an RFP on that property, whether it's from Inn Morro Bay or members of the public?
Well, we could RFP it, and that is potentially part of our upping our lease, upping our revenue, future, putting that out to bid, which obviously the inn would be more than welcome to bid on. I think they should. I think they could incorporate it in and make some pretty cool things there. But we've got the option of a developer or somebody from the public bidding on as well because we've got that access easement.
Thank you.
Sean, that's all eelgrass right now. Since the slips have moved away, it's all eelgrass bed, so it'd be pretty difficult to build any slips there.
Okay, a little history. Do you know why the city just let them abandon that lease? I mean, it just doesn't seem like, it seems like they should still have to maintain it.
Well, the lease ended at some point, and I think I'm not completely solid on this, but a previous owner went into bankruptcy, and I think it got sold in receivership, and somewhere probably in there is when the lease expired, and the folks that basically took over on it, foreclosed on it, or took it out of the receivership sale, however it occurred, had no interest in continuing the lease, and let it go, just reverted to the city.
All right. What did I have a question? So with the harbor office replacements, would there be a demo and then the modules be put on top, or would the existing building get left there for future remodeling or demolishing and then the modulars would go somewhere else?
No, it'd be demo the existing and put a modular there.
Oh, put them on top. Okay. And then on the North T Pier, how... You guys rent those spaces out right now, right?
Well, the few boats that are there, they're paying the regular T-Pier fees, yes. And then Fish and Game pays a lease fee over on their end where they've got their dock, and Coast Guard pays for their end. They've got a lease for the little shed on the end, and then their slips.
And so when this is... taken care of, would it be like a complete rebuild, or would it be like...
Well, the 1.5 will not pay for everything that needs to get done. If that survives the budget, we're going to get with the public works team and our engineer that did the assessment and identify the most critical needs and the things that make the most sense to spend that 1.5 on.
Okay, so...
And
like
it may
partial.
Be a combination of structural utilities. Just depends on kind of what the shape of everything is and what the engineers recommend.
But you wouldn't lose, like, all of the rent all at once for, like, years on end?
Ask that question again.
You wouldn't, like, all the people who are on that T-Pier, you wouldn't lose them throughout that re...
No, I don't think so. I mean, even if we got the full $3.8 million, like we did a pretty major structural repair on that pier back in 2013, 14, somewhere through there. And there were more boats on it at the time. We moved things around and, nobody had to leave. Even Fish and Game, we did quite a bit of work on the north end, even underneath the Coast Guard's building, and Coast Guard didn't have to leave, nor did Fish and Game. So, we figure out a way to accommodate them.
Okay, so it is still one of those things that even if you get 1.5, you can still get work accomplished. It's not that you're waiting for the entire amount in order to completely redo it.
Correct.
Okay, cool. All right, that's it for my questions. Mary?
Yeah, I want to raise, I have concerns with the modulars as a midterm solution because I feel like once you install the modulars, you relieve the pressure and kind of the urgency around redoing the buildings. And I think the modulars will look especially ugly next to the beautiful new Coast Guard building. And so I worry that if you get the modulars without going the full way, and we call it a midterm solution, because the needs will be most of the way met and we won't have, you know, kind of the situation that you're in now to show for it, we will never get to the point or, like, we will never really have the urgency around replacing it fully. I wonder if you thought about maybe going all the way to the full kind of beautiful long-term solution with the building, and maybe if we need to, taking out some sort of construction loan that essentially replaces the payments that we were making towards the pier loan.
I don't disagree with your concern. On the long-term versus short-term versus medium-term and what will happen. Community development's a live example of that. You know, those were put in as a short-term solution for community development and public works, and that was a long time ago, probably 15 years ago at least at this point, and they don't see on their horizon getting that building replaced, and that was supposed to be the short-term fix for them. So I share that concern. I also have concern for my employees and their health and their well-being operating in that environment, in that building. And so I'm trying to, I guess, thread the needle or split the difference there. But, yeah, there's that real possibility that, oh, they're set now. They're good. You don't need anything. And the pressure's off. Have not explored in any depth a different alternative like that. And maybe a grant funding opportunity there, too, and trying to see if there's some kind of grant funding. We're just kind of got some traction up at City Hall for doing something, and this is the first thing that we've kind of come across or at least explored in any kind of depth. So those other things are well taken, and I agree we should probably look at some other alternatives as well.
Thanks. One other question. Regarding the Harbor Patrol truck, that seems like to me an opportunity for the Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Patrol to help with fundraising for that, since it is such a visible thing that's out in the community helping citizens. Is that something that you've had potentially conversations to get their support and fundraising for?
I have not personally. I know the Friends... you know, as they periodically do, you know, as they did with the boat, they periodically do these campaigns and say, you know, okay, here's our next campaign. We're working on this. I've not been directly involved with those conversations lately. Lori, I don't know. Put you on the spot. You and Becca seem to work pretty closely with Friends. What's their latest thinking on campaigns? I mean, the boat, you know, raised $100,000, and that was a huge campaign, and spent a lot of their resources down, and so now they're getting ready to, I think, figure out how to gear back up to the next campaign. But I don't know, I'll let Lori speak to that.
The only thing that I know that they're working on right now are trash receptacles going out to the rock from kind of where our harbor office is to the rock. They're buying trash receptacles. That's about it.
All right, thank you.
Eric, I have a quick question. Did you say $300,000 for modulars?
Yes.
Was that just the modulars themselves? That didn't. Did that number take into account demo?
Yeah, that's demo setup and some degree of interior arrangement of them.
because actually that kind of seems a little bit low.
For estimates, it probably is low.
Yeah, because what I'm thinking, that building is about the same age as I am, and we'll just leave it at that. So, I mean, there's got to be some asbestos and things, some interesting building materials used in that time zone.
We've done lead and asbestos assessment. It does have the asbestos floor tiles.
Yeah.
And lead, one little section, one little area of lead paint on an exterior, and so lead doesn't really appear to be a big issue. It's more the asbestos stuff.
Okay, yeah. So no licking the walls, please.
Or the floors.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, we're not going there.
The rule doesn't fly there.
Just you're asking for input, and my input is you have to spend money on your infrastructure to be able to make money to service the rest of the city's infrastructure, if that makes sense. And, you know, being in and out of the office, not as much as you, but, yeah, it needs some serious love. And, you know, it does, because right now it's kind of an embarrassing joke for such a serious department. And that's no reflection on you guys. None whatsoever, because what the work you do out of that space is phenomenal.
I call it home.
I would also like to say, remember what Kowski mentioned about like the long-term solution. If you do put the modulars on the area of where you'd want to build eventually, you've kind of taken away that ability to start the construction of that by just having to remove them again and put them somewhere else. So perhaps if another plan of attack would be to create a temporary modular that is off the property and then try and work towards grant funding to have a final actual building put there.
Triangle lot.
Yeah, you guys can go over to the triangle lot and we'll put a little yellow light thing so you can cross the street in a flash so you can get to the emergencies. Okay. Anyway, how did you want to do the rest of that? Do you want us to prioritize, have a discussion?
Up to you, but I'm just looking for input and ideas. Whether you concur or whether, you know, that's the craziest idea I've ever heard, don't do that. You know, that kind of stuff. Just want to get your input on it and run things through you and see where you land on it.
Well, personally, I think they're all very valid things that have come up in our budget top 10 in the last few years. And so they're all worthy, but you have 600,000. So should we prioritize and pick like number one, number two, number three that we would advise that we think are good ideas to move forward on, recommend?
Sure.
Does that sound good, top three?
If you can, assuming you can get there, the committee of seven.
Right. Well, all right. Well, everybody's asked something about the harbor office replacement. Is that in the top three for anybody? Raise your hand. One. All right. So everybody, you know, look at them and think of your own top three, and then I'm just going to run down the line. And if I see more than one to two hands, we'll come back. So Beach Street North Slips replacement.
Can I ask how many people are served by those slips in relation to, let's say, a T-pier?
The Beach Street North slips are. And Lori, you're probably going to get this before me. Lori's French. Seven boats?
Are Bob and Billy, are those slips are those considered Beach Street also?
Well, it's from.
Or is it just?
It's from.
The Morning Star.
Bill, Mark, going south to north. Bill Blue's on the end, right?
Sanders is on the south.
Sanders is by Geo's.
That's the South Slips.
That's the South.
North Slips. We're okay. Cognizini is.
Oh, okay. Okay, so that's the TKO, Owen,
yep.
Bob, Billy, Mark, Joe. Am I right?
Seven.
Yeah, okay, and then Alan.
That's the South Slips.
Yeah, Alan, us, Tom, Morning Light, and Jim.
Yep.
So what's that, 12?
12 total.
Yeah.
So North Slips, seven.
Yeah. Although I will say I was going down to the boat the other day, and I personally would like to see those slips rebuilt, but that's just me. But just the one ramp down at our area, it's like, woohoo! I've got to hang on going down there now.
And those are public access, correct?
Our designing on that, working on, we're not going to make it, you know, flat like down at the launch ramp, but
no,
we're going to get that 45-degree angle out of it.
Yeah, well, there's also getting a hole down there in the ramp, too, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay, more than you needed to know.
Yeah, I was just looking for some perspective. I know that the members of the public might tune into some of these meetings and wonder, you know, how many people are served by different areas. So that's...
Yeah, and to answer your question about public access, there are gates up there that say, please don't. Our boat used to be on the other side of Giovanni's, and we saw a lot more people going down there that weren't supposed to be down there than we do, I think, on Beach Street.
Maybe because it looks treacherous? A little more treacherous?
No, I think it's because, God forgive me, Gio's Miracle Mile line
isn't
there.
Oh, right. They're bored and wandering.
Yeah.
Okay. Waiting in line. Okay. Sean, was that the end of your question?
With respect to that one question, yeah.
Okay.
So are we doing? We're doing a top three. Is that what we're thinking? Because I do have another not spending the money and having it as a reserve is sort of on the table as well. Just knowing that reserve accounts, either emergency or matching grant funds, may actually increase our purchasing power and be able to knock a number of these items off, including something like a bigger build at Harbor, because grant funds do exist. But when we have zero in the bank, it's a little bit harder sell. With some granting institutions.
I kind of agree with that. The fisherman's wife in me says, save half of it, just because you don't know what's coming, but that's just me.
Okay. Do you have a question?
I think kind of along the same lines. Is there's the second two items on the bottom of the page, the South T Pier Harbor Truck replacement. It fits well within that 500K. To me, those are safety issues, so it's not really a... To me, it's not a... We have the money. They're, you know, the harbor truck is visible. If we get somebody else to pay for it, that's great. But to me, those things should be... They're affordable. We have the money. Let's do it now. Just as my personal opinion. The harbor office replacement, you know, there's always a passion for it. I think we need to wait for the replacement for Eric and the city council and see if a short-term solution is the best we're going to get. $300,000 seems like a pretty good deal, but I'd like to get, again, more input from, you know, the people that control the funds. That's just my 2 cents worth. The other stuff, I mean, sure, I'd like to have a North Teep here, but I don't have $4 million. It's my 2 cents worth.
So I understand that, like, the South Teep here that says that it has 95,000 worth of work to be done, and the North Teep here has 3.8, but they can do that sequentially. It doesn't have to be, like, all at once. So you could still spend, like, 100,000 on the North Teep here compared to the South Teep here, and the North Teep here is in more disrepair in totality. You know what I'm saying? So you could dog-ear...
Correct, yeah. I mean, but there is still this, you know, $1.5 million hanging out there eventually with the congressional earmarks.
Okay. So going down the line, so I saw three, myself included, Beach Street, North Slips. Is that rank high on the top three I know I saw your two hands. Anybody else raise their hand for... So, no, Beach Street slips.
Would it be easier? I'm just trying to ease the... I mean, we could talk about each of these all night long individually, one by one, but would it be easier to everybody just name your top three?
Okay, name your top three.
And then
go down the line.
We can put on a spreadsheet, and then we know how many instead of counting hands and doing all that. So that'd be easier. And then I did want to add something on the Beach Street slips that Lori pointed out. This Lori. All of our slips, not just Beach Street, but we sublease those out pretty heavily when the fishermen are gone on a daily, monthly basis. And so they get a fair amount of use there. And then on the head float portion, the section between the docks and the shore, at least on the Beach Street North, we've got Morbay Oyster Company, got a pretty big chunk of real estate there where they've got a lot of oyster seed growing there in those little docks. And so we've got that with Grassy Bar down at Launch Ramp, too. So it's not just the commercial fishermen in the seven slips that are using it. It's a lot of transient boats, and then the oyster company on the front side, and then there's another boat on the front side, old commercial fishing boat. It's not really fishing anymore on the front side. So there's that use as well, not just the seven slips.
Yeah, the take that I was thinking about this is that we're in need of revenue, and right now, what are the parts of this list that are making us revenue? Make sure that they continue making us revenue and that they stay safe enough and desirable enough to continue making revenue. So I'm going to start with Member Mary Witkowski on her top three.
Yeah, so what I would do would be pay off the South T Pier structural needs, try to work with the Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Patrol to raise money to get the truck replaced, and I think I would put work to look into replacing the harbor office fully with a long-term solution, potentially seeking a construction loan to pay for that. And I would put the remaining funds away in the emergency fund, also making sure the emergency fund is full and potentially available for use if we do get a grant and require matching funds.
Okay, so I'm going to write this down as South T Pier number one, Harbor Office Permanent Structure number two, and three, Reserve. Does that sound about right? Just trying to put them in an outline that I can match other people up with. Okay.
Yeah, I more or less agree. South T Pier number one, maybe run some sort of split with the Friends of the Harbor Department on a truck replacement of that 65K. Because if we can hold on to 30 of that 65, we're looking at 400,000 in the bank, in the reserve fund, which would be great. And then we could use that either emergency or possibly grant fund matching for Harbor Office would probably be a notch above the North T Pier in terms of prioritizing for long-term improvement there. Does that make sense?
So for you, I have South T Pier, 300,000, I mean 30,000 to the truck, Harbor Office, and you said North T Pier, what's left? Okay. Yeah.
We're holding on to about 400,000 of that was.
Okay.
Yeah, it was, it was a priority.
Harder. Chris?
I'll make this a little simpler. Beach Street, South T Pier, North T Pier.
Member Myers?
Truck, South T Pier, Beach Street.
Lori? Office, just the ramp at the South Beach Street, because we can work on grant funding for the rest, and bank the rest. Savings.
Councilmember Dowdy?
I think I will go along with Sean and Mary. I think both those are good suggestions.
Mine would be beach. Which T pier? North T pier, and then South T pier. All right. I don't know what you're gonna do with this.
I'll compare notes with you. You know, maybe next week, and
okay,
just make sure we're both on the same page in terms of what we wrote down, and then obviously Lori's got the video too to go off of, so.
Okay. All right. Well,
And then the last part of this, sorry to interrupt you, revenue-generating ideas.
Revenue-seeking.
Got any spitball revenue-generating ideas anybody want to throw out there?
Oh, boy, do I have one. I sent this to Becca a while back. I don't know if you've been following, but the Salt and Kennedy money, which NOAA has been using for their own little budget balancing act, there's been kind of a takeover, shall we say, from the commercial fishing district in Alaska. God bless their little hearts. So there's been a new board created called the American Fisheries Advisory Council, which yours truly got a nomination and on the seat, and our first meeting is in December. Anyways, our goal is to get back to the original ideal of how that money is spent, which is to promote and bolster, basically, I can't think of the exact wording, the commercial fishing industry of the United States. NOAA, God bless their little black hearts, were giving out grants for like the three-toed sloth, how it affects with a squid. You know, total stuff that does not affect commercial fishing or sport fishing in general. So basically we're having a coup, and you did not hear this from me. But there's enough commercial fishermen across the United States on this board that we're trying to get the money put back to commercial fishing. And I could see port infrastructure and things like that as a priority. So I'm just telling you this on the lowdown, and everybody in Morro Bay who's watching this, this could be a very solid thing.
And what was the, you had a name for that, a title?
The Salton Kennedy Funds.
Salton, like Salton Sea, Salton?
Yeah, S-A-L-T-O-N. Kennedy. Dash Kennedy. And like I said, if you look at the past grants, they're like for three-toed sloths out of Virginia type thing.
Didn't know they had three-toed sloths in Virginia.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're just strange things. But
okay,
we're getting back to the original intent of this money and not NOAA using it as their little slush fund.
Okay. Thank you.
So I sent Benica the link a while back, but okay, it doesn't reflect the new and upkeeping, and I will know more in December, probably when you leave.
Okay.
But you could put a sticky note on your desk somewhere for the new harbor director.
Oh, revenue generating ideas. That's right. I was still on the old topic. Jean, please. Sorry.
I would recommend that the city council put out a request for proposals for somebody to do grant writing, and they get paid by the percentage of the grants that they accumulate.
Anybody else? Sean?
As Vistra continues pushing forward with their battery project and has community benefits meetings, there are opportunities for community benefits agreements that wouldn't likely end up with the liquid cash in the city's pockets, but perhaps earmarked infrastructure projects that, you know, in lieu serve as revenue generators, I guess, in that they knock off some of our infrastructure needs possibly. So I would encourage members of the public and members of the advisory board and anyone who feels strongly about the Morro Bay waterfront to come to community meetings dealing with the battery plant and voicing your opinions about what types of projects in Morro Bay should be partially funded by a potential battery plant in town.
If memory serves me right, I could be wrong on this, though. I think that's how Morro Bay got the original swimming pool back in the dark ages for you guys. That swimming pool's no longer there, but it was because of the PG&E plant. So, I mean, I already thought that was like a given on the table, is Vistra getting money from...
I think it generally is a given. As to what that funds is totally open for discussion. I've spoken with I attend all the Vistra meetings, and Vistra personnel seem readily open to any city ideas and anything that's going to help win over members of the general public are likely going to be well received by Vistra. So yeah, voice your opinions, everyone.
Yeah, to my knowledge, every talk to Brad during their open evening to get information out, and it's not up to them, it's up to us. And nothing's set in stone, nothing's been figured out behind the scenes. It is for the community to be excited about and back and come up with and get somebody else to build it, not Vistra. So, but they'll pay for it. So, my future revenue generating ideas, I brought this up before, is a 1-2% of the Tidelands lease held properties money that we receive, roughly like a $20,000 minimum year, go to marketing. It is one of those things that even Bob Fowler was talking about. Malls will do that because it increases the people who come to the areas where they spend money, and then everybody wins because we get sales tax money, we get revenue, the higher percentage, and more money goes to the Harbor Fund. It's a efficient way to increase revenue, in my opinion. Also, we can work with TBID on opportunities that would directly increase traffic to Tidelands properties. Right now, we're the saddest place to go shopping on the holidays because it is dark and dismal and not very cheery. It's pretty quiet and dark down there. I know the Rotary Club is doing a great job with all the things that they do, but it would be really nice to get TBID involved and try and get a more seasonal approach. And if the Tidelands properties were giving a small percentage of the money, they would be more inclined to come down and do those things. Have aid in completing Coleman Park. So again, I think that we should still, even though there's grant money being searched out for the Coleman Park, and it looks like we did get a good amount, that we ask Public Works what it is that we can do and still take part in Coleman Park, because even though it might not be a business where it receives money, it is a draw for people to come and visit Morro Bay. And so, my next one is have aid in relationship with state parks and revitalizing area from rock parking to the jetty. That is the area that has like the metal stumps sticking out of the ground with orange, you know, tetanus goo all around it. That is a safety hazard. And if we beautify that area and continue the harbor walk down there, we have created a landmark type of setting between coming to visit Morro Bay to look at the rock stand out there and look at it to actually walking around the entire bay and enjoying what an amazing place we have here. So we want to talk to state parks about revitalizing that, and that would benefit us. Also, it's surprisingly more interested by business owners on the Tidelands properties to think about rock parking fees. If we actually did have a kiosk that charged $2 admittance on the weekends and summer weekdays, we would have a lot of money for infrastructure. And it is something that if you broadcast it in the right way, everybody understands that this money is going directly into what it is that you're enjoying. And there are a lot of parts to that, moving parts, so it's not just everybody pays $2. There's different things that we can talk about as far as like locals and free and all that good stuff. I did want to say from the last thing, I know that the Harbor Department deserves a really nice building and respectable place to do business and have people come in and visit them. I do know that B-22 didn't get passed, and as far as the first thing, if we did noticeably to the community go to fix the area where the staff is, when they've just seen a huge broadcast of how this slip is messed up and this seawall is messed up and this is why we need the money for the infrastructure, if the first thing that they see with what we do with the money, it might be sending a message that isn't necessarily what we want to put out with how we would spend the money if we got the money. So it is infrastructure, but just letting you know that they denied B-22 because city wasn't using the funds correctly, or some of them were saying that. So anyway, that's my two cents on future revenue generating ideas, and I will still say again that I'd like to do a workshop for the general public, because if they don't like the ideas that we came up with, then let's hear theirs. So any other additions? Mary?
Yeah, I have two. One's maybe normal and one's crazy. I like to see from the leaseholders that there was support in transferring some of the transit occupancy tax that's generated on the Embarcadero. Two, I think that we need to make it more cost-effective for the Harbor Department for us to bring tourists to Morro Bay, because right now they're footing, I think, like the trash bill, for example, like for the rock, for tourists that come to Morro Bay and don't eat down on the Embarcadero, we're paying for the trash. So, like, with the mall analogy, we're, like, letting someone who's not shopping in our mall come and deposit their trash in our mall on a regular basis, and then we're covering the bill. So I think we should look at doing chargebacks to the city for things like trash and variable expenses that increase with the number of tourists that come to the waterfront. One crazy idea that I've been thinking about is, you know, who comes and visits and doesn't eat down on the Embarcadero. And I was thinking the other day, I was hungry and I ran through the McDonald's drive-thru to get an Egg McMuffin meal, and it was over $10. And I said, holy crap, I could have gone to Goddess Goods and gotten a delicious pesto bagel for less than this. But the reason I didn't go and do that was because of the efficiency of the drive-thru. And I know San Luis Obispo has never had drive-thrus. And I think, wouldn't it be awesome if Morro Bay got rid of their drive-thrus, and potentially that tipped the scale between someone going to the fast food restaurants because of the convenience of the drive-thru, and instead went to a local business to buy local food at the same cost that's also maybe healthier to them, and we also reduce the carbon emissions of the drive-thru. But anyways, that's a crazy idea for people to noodle on also.
I will noodle that. Okay, anybody else? All right. Okay, so in completion to this, staff, do you guys have any things to add to this agenda item?
Nope. Thanks for the input.
Okay, so we're going to get together and talk about the main points that everybody was interested in with the excess of budget and figure that out individually, and maybe I can bring it back to next meeting. And then all of these revenue-generating ideas we wrote down as well, and hopefully I can put it together, the suggestions, and in a letter form and send it to council. So I'll just take what you guys mentioned and include it in a letter to them. Okay, I'm going to open it up for public comment. Right now, seeing no hands raised. Highland, do you have anybody online?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thank you so much. So our next item is B5, our Harbor Advisory Board Public Engagement Outreach. So... I'm going to start on this side of the room, Member Dowdy.
Okay. The two groups I looked into were the Miracle Culture and the Sport Fishing. Miracle Culture, in the past, whenever it rained, they basically had to shut down the oyster beds so they had several weeks or days of clear water before they could sell the oysters. Now that the oyster companies, Morro Bay Oyster Company and Grassy Bar Oyster Country, have onshore facilities where they can purge the oysters, it should speed up the process of them being able to release their oysters, which is really good. On the sport fishing aspect, I heard some scuttlebutt that Virgis sold to a couple in Bakersfield. I don't know whether it's true or not, but that's what I was told. So, and then in the following, Eric, I wish you fair winds following seas. Because you have been really a good steward for our harbor, and I appreciate it.
Member French?
I really don't have anything. Jeremiah didn't leave me those instructions.
Mr. Myers?
None at this time, thank you.
Member Vail?
Yeah, I've sort of been operating in a combination of the Harbor Board, but also the, as usual, the Maritime Museum. And we had an event in October attended by thousands. It was a family day at the museum and on the grounds, set up for kids, set up for adults, obviously, food. And what we found out is that we had a gathering there of locals where fishermen were lying to fishermen. Recreational boaters were telling tales. People came and sat around and stayed. People came and it was free, came, sat around, stayed for hours. And we're looking forward to doing that sort of thing again because everything's for sale in Morro Bay, and Morro Bay needs money. But at the same time, locals need something to do that's a community effort. And we hit the nail on the head, and so we'll be doing that again. We also had a gathering at the Yacht Club for more or less the patrons of the Maritime Museum. City Council arrived, the mayor arrived, lots of people showed up. I thought it was a foolish idea. It was $100 a plate. We sold out. So there's money going around that I have respect for that I didn't really realize was going to work out very well. And then lastly, I should have mentioned it at the beginning, the museum has received a grant for $105,000 to spruce up and paint that doggone submarine, which is not my favorite toy in the fleet, because basically it has very little to do with Morro Bay history. Nonetheless, we've been given $100,000 to fix it up. So that's been my community stuff lately.
Member Green?
Some updates with the community development and things going on with the Planning Commission. I already mentioned that Vistra has ongoing community outreach events. There are opportunities to subscribe to community development emails. If you go onto the Morro Bay City website, I would encourage anyone who's interested in planning and new developments in town to subscribe to the, there's a couple different email lists that you can subscribe to. You get alerted to meetings that are coming up. For example, on November 16th, Vistra had a community outreach, kind of a walk-in meeting with several Vistra representatives, and you could ask them one-to-one. One-on-one, any questions that you had about the project. They had like a stack of batteries there that you could physically see what that looked like. Anyway, there are opportunities to attend meetings like that. And community development has also improved their postings and their updating on the city website. I'm looking at it right now. I talked to community development about Maritime Museum's minor modification to their space there and their expansion, which is great. It's exciting. If you want to see their plans, they are posted on community development's website. There's also, you know, going back to Vistra, I think there's a website. Let's see, what was it called? I want to get this right. It is MorroBayEnergyStorage.com. That's not a city website. That's provided by Vistra, but there that is posted on the city website. I think that's all I wanted to mention. The general plan and the zoning code update have passed through council. To my knowledge, it's sitting at Coastal Commission right now, and that's really at the 1 yard line and is about ready to pass. All right, that's all I have.
No community updates for me, and I just wanted to echo Jean's. I'm pretty much still in denial that Eric's leaving, so I will a little bit longer refuse to accept that. But just in general, I think you've done the work of multiple people amazingly, and as someone who's dove deep into the P&L and the way that you fiscally manage the department, I think it's been managed excellently, and so really great work.
One final note, I think we should all give Eric a knock on our head.
It's okay, I've taken all the keys to his trucks, he can't leave.
All right.
And he's not getting the keys to a new one.
My outreach is National Estuary Program. I had a chance to reach out to them in regards to school-age children. There's a possibility with a new project coming in at 833 Embarcadero that they will have a little area for them to have belly time. So they'll take kids down to the new dock and have them lay on their bellies and possibly even do a plexiglass float for them to be able to look into our bay. Also in the works, maybe they're still, I hope they're moving forward with what we talked about, which is doing something called Owl Eyes. So it's like a viewfinder, and so you can just look through it and see the Morro Rock, but if you click a button, it will take you back like 10 years and then take you back like 20 years and take you back like 40 and 60 and give you the view of what Morro Bay looked like at that time. And then even click another button and do like a future thing. If we do this with the environment, if we do that with the environment. So it seems like a really cool idea, and I hope it comes to fruition, and I'm going to work my part, do my part, do my part to help. January, Becca, Harbor officer, and I are going to go to the fifth grade Del Mar students and talk about boating safety and start a poster program for them to be able to advertise for our boating safety day. And that is it. Again, super sad about Eric leaving, and we got a whole December left, so.
I just thought of a great fundraising idea.
we're going to put a little collection fee on everybody that you have to rescue coming down from the rock. You know, 1,000, 20,000. Name a price tag. Because you guys have been, you were up there this weekend again. I mean, what do you think? You know, an extra little fee for stupidity.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, think about it.
So I think that does it for that. We do have one last thing, which is future agenda items. Does anybody have any future agenda items that they would like to put into? I'm just going to float one to Member Green. One of the things that you brought up before is the way that funds are received from the harbor, and that with everybody bringing in their excess percentage rents at the end of the year, why not do it quarterly? And so I'm just not, it's not necessarily a future agenda item, but I just want to throw it out there to others as well as you guys who are on the budget committee to think about adding an addendum to the lease policy or even look into the possibility of doing percentage rents quarterly, which would help the Harbor Department budget more efficiently, and especially because we've had so many ups and downs with what's going on in the world, that quarterly would be really helpful in organizing future budgets. So anyway, I'm going to throw that out there. If you noodle over that, and maybe we can put it on a future agenda item if Cal and I are here next year. Yep, we're both up for re-election, so who knows what the new board will do, a new city council will do. All right. And with that, we bid you adieu.
When is the next meeting, Eric? Never.
February 2nd.
Oh, so we don't meet in January?
Yeah, we don't have January, July, or November.
Okay.
Right, so February is the next one.